Sorry we're starting a few minutes late, but we did have some materials that we needed to have taken care of and what have you. So we have today the minutes for March 8th.
Mr. Chairman, I've read the minutes and I'd like to move them.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. We now have House File 1802, Representative Murphy. 802, I misread that.
Right. Mr. Chair, I would move the division report on House File 802.
Okay, the motion for the division report is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried.
Mr. Chair, I move House File 802, the first committee engrossment, be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay, the motion is before us, and I understand you have an amendment, Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair, I would move the H0802A5 amendment.
Okay, the amendment is before us, and will that be explained by you or Representative
Murphy? Representative Murphy.
Okay, Representative Murphy on the amendment.
Mr. Chair, I don't have a copy of the amendment. Is this the SMGC amendment?
Oh, Mr. Chair, I would withdraw that amendment.
Okay, the amendment is withdrawn. Then Representative Murphy on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 802 is the legislation to move forward with the work that we've been doing to try and restore general assistance medical care. If you look at the legislation, it will look familiar as it's built upon the work we've already done, built upon the work that's already come through this committee, with some notable exceptions. In the legislation that was before you earlier, we had a county provider option, which is a voluntary option for the counties and providers to come together to work to care for the population in a discrete population, trying to meet both their health care and human service needs. That idea has been significantly expanded in the legislation, and it's referred to now as a coordinating care organization. Essentially, 80% of the general assistance medical care population is cared for in about 17 of Minnesota's hospitals. Those 17 hospitals would have the option of volunteering to become a coordinating care organization, working with their outpatient facilities and in cooperation with the county to care for a discrete population. They would get us a global payment for that based on their 2007 GAMC expenditures. Because this doesn't cover the entire state, there's also an uncompensated care pool of $20 million. And there's also a statewide drug pool because we know this population is sick and they require a lot of medications, especially for those with mental illness. The other significant change of the legislation is the amount of funding. The bill that came through the finance committee last time was worth $281 million. This legislation costs $164 million. So it is significantly less. The general assistance medical care program as we know it is intact in law, although there are changes to it. Minnesota Care remains solvent, protecting health care coverage for working Minnesotans. And it also helps the hospitals, especially rural hospitals that see a lot of Minnesota Care clientele. So some rural hospitals that will see less in reimbursement under GAMC will maintain their reimbursement in Minnesota Care, which is a little bit of a buffer. With the bill, we're asking a lot of Minnesotans. We're asking a lot of Minnesota's healthcare providers, hospitals, physicians, nurses, and others. We're asking a lot of advocates who represent GAMC and their enrollees. The timeline for the implementation is very intense, and from my perspective, the bill is underfunded. We're counting on providers and advocates to help us with an ongoing evaluation of the care provided, and this is an area that will need more attention as we go forward. Most importantly to me, the work that we've done on this legislation has been first and foremost to protect the health care of those 30,000 people that are served in GAMC each month, those people that are living in the shadows, people with chemical dependency, they have mental illness, they're homeless, and their place in Minnesota is protected. We've not walked away from them. We're not going to abandon them. I think that's important. I want to let you know about the funding of the bill. The bill is in balance. The funding comes from a number of places. It's a combination of current program funds left in the GAMC account, agreed upon health and human service cuts proposed by the governor. There's one remaining cut to a county grant that serves the mentally ill for about $7 million. There's federal DSH money and federal drug rebate money, and one-time health care access fund of $48 million to pay for the bridge between April and June when we're moving from GAMC as we know it and to the new model under the coordinating care organizations and the uncompensated care pool. And I'd be happy to take your questions.
Are there questions for Representative Murphy? Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, how much is funding has gone down? And what's the funding gone down in this bill dollar-wise since we, since the first bill that was, you know, pulled off the table and then there was a renegotiated bill and the governor vetoed that? Since that first bill, what kind of dollars have the medical community and the people that depend on them lost as far as this bill?
Mr. Chair and Representative Rukavina, I think I'd like to start with the veto. The cost of the veto last May was $381 million. We expected or anticipated if the program had gone forward without the veto, we would be spending about $500 million. The proposal that we brought forward with the healthcare community was worth $281 million. And this program is now costed out at $164 million. So it is a significant cut to general assistance medical care, which will be borne largely by our healthcare providers.
So,
Representative Rukavina,
if I understand you, before the unallotment of last year, and you had made significant cuts even to that point, to Representative Huntley, and from that point, it's like was $500 million, and now we're down to 164. Do I understand that correctly?
That is correct, Mr. Chair.
The people that depend on us to help them live, and the medical communities, and the nurses, and the hospitals, and everybody else are seeing a loss of $340 million, approximately.
That is correct.
And so,
Representative Rukavina,
Mr. Chair, and maybe two members on this side of the aisle, that Representative Biskins, my good friend, you want to cut government spending. Is that enough? Are we starving the beast enough, as Grover Norquist wants us to do? Have we shrunk it enough that it'll drown itself in the bathtub, or is there more that needs to be done?
Well, Mr. Speaker, Representative Rukavina, first off, I'm a little disappointed that we sat here for half an hour and the DFL members were absent. We left with the understanding that we would be called back when the meeting was called to order, and now I get message that we've started, and so I'm not quite sure what has been gone through. Is this enough, Representative Rukavina? I don't know. I know we've still got, from the targets I've seen, about $400 million yet to reduce to protect the taxpayers of the state of Minnesota. Is this enough from this piece? It'd be irresponsible of me to say it were or were not without being able to see the whole picture.
So,
Representative Rukavina.
Representative Biskins, you know, you and I are kind of good friends, even though we don't think at all alike when it comes to politics or spending or the role of government. But, you know, I have to make a decision whether to vote for this or not, and I don't want to cut these people off at all. And I don't know how you feel in your heart about this community of people that I think are, many of whom are vulnerable, and maybe there's a few that aren't, but I'd say most are. But I want to raise some revenue in order to vote for this bill, and that was our agreement last year that at least we wanted as a compromise. Mm-hmm. One-third, one-third, one-third. And it never, the compromise never worked because somebody didn't play nice. But, you know, are you going to vote for this cut now? This is a cut. It's a significant cut. It's from 500 down to 160, according from what I understand. I don't want to vote for it, but you, I think, do like what it's moving towards. So are you going to help pass this bill and vote for it, you and Representative Coles, who just walked into the room, and Representative Pepin and Szymanski and Kiffmeyer and the others who want to, you know, starve the beast? Are you going to vote for it? I don't want to. I don't want to starve the beast. I don't think there's a beast out there, to be perfectly honest with you.
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I would like the record to reflect that Representative Rukavina did indeed acknowledge that I have a heart.
And Mr. Thank Chair, you, if I need a transplant, I want his because it hasn't been used that much. But it's there. I know it's there. And I may need it, too.
Okay.
I don't know if he was answering me, Mr. Chair. Other than the heart transplant, I had asked a question, and I just wanted to know if he was going to vote for the bill, because it is starving the beast pretty good.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Rukavina, I don't think I'll vote for this bill at this point because, as I said before, this is irresponsible of me to move forward without being able to see the big picture. If I vote for this bill and I vote for all the other bills coming down the line, then what I am acknowledging, and maybe that's what your side is acknowledging, I don't know, but there are still $400 million left. And you're saving two areas of state budget, which is the nursing home, Health and Human Services and Education. I need to see the whole picture, Representative Rukavina, before I make my decisions.
Representative Rukavina, did you have a follow-up? Representative Biskins, you weren't here, but two things. We were waiting for a few things. And that was why we started late. I apologized for having started late before you got here. Our staff went to find the Republicans. She couldn't find them, apparently, and asked one of your researchers if they would do the same. And we waited until we, one, had a quorum, and two, there were Republicans present when we convened the meeting, just so you know. Any further discussion? Representative Hundley.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, there's not a lot of good in this bill, but there's a lot of ugly. But I think we have to pass this bill. The one thing positive that it will do is stop the auto enrollment of GAMC people into Minnesota Care. That was underway. Commissioner Ludeman has stopped that process. If we pass this bill very quickly. If we had continued that, basically we would have had to kick about 40,000 Minnesota working people off of Minnesota Care. This bill that Representative Murphy has come up with does prevent that auto enrollment and saves those working people's health insurance. This is a bill that we're going to give the providers about one-third of what they used to get. So it's a third of a cup, not half a cup. And what we used to pay them didn't cover their costs anyway. So this is a huge cut to our providers. And it's typical of what some people do around here is that they make the state budget look good by transferring the cost to somebody else. These people aren't going to go away. They're going to remain in Minnesota. They're going to go to the emergency room, and our good hospitals will treat these people. And they won't get paid, or if they do get paid, they'll get a third of what they used to get. And guess what these hospitals are going to do then, folks? If they can, they will raise the rates that they charge everybody else, so that those of us that have insurance will see our premiums go up because of this bill. But it makes the state budget look good. But it doesn't make the budget look very good for those families that are paying for their own health insurance. So I urge you to vote for this, but it is it's the best that could be done under the circumstances. There's lots of controversy about how it will be turned out, but at least it stops the auto-enrollment into Minnesota Care.
Okay, any further discussion, Representative Rukavina?
Mr. Chair, Representative Huntley, Representative Murphy, you know, Representative Murphy, I know how hard you worked on this bill, and I commend you, and it wasn't easy to deal with someone who doesn't want to know how to cut a deal, but is there any estimate that, you know, I have a regional, a community-owned hospital, and we have to take everyone, and we do, and we have, it's a hospital that pays decent wages. Most of the employees there are union folks, and they get a decent wage for taking care of people, and I'm afraid of the layoffs. Do we have an estimate of what that $340 million means in jobs, and is there going to come a point in some of our communities that we take our kids or our grandkids to an emergency room and there's nobody left in the emergency room because everybody's gotten laid off because of what we're doing? Representative Huntley, do you know the number of jobs that these cuts forced on us by the governor are costing in our state?
Well,
jobs that are important and take care of people that need help?
You know, Mr. Chair and Representative Rukavina, I don't know the total for the state, but I can tell you that Hennepin County Medical Center has already laid off 200 people in anticipation of the bill. And what does that mean? Obviously, the people lose their jobs, but it also means that things will slow down at Hennepin County Medical Center. They will have fewer beds open. They will have longer delays. And they do have mental health beds there. And if you're a 16-year-old kid from a very poor family and you have a mental health crisis and you get hauled into HCMC, you may have a three-day wait before you get a room. But what the public doesn't understand, if you're a millionaire's 16-year-old kid having the same mental health crisis and you get sent to Hennepin County Medical Center, and by the way, if you call 911 in Minneapolis, you always go to Hennepin County Medical Center. If you're a millionaire's kid, you will have the same wait. So this bill and these cuts will hurt not just the poor, but everybody in the state, and will, as you said, have dramatic job losses in the healthcare sector.
Representative Rukavina, do you have any more? Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, the only one line I think that I didn't hear Representative Huntley say, which we have to say every time we're doing this, is as long as we refuse to let people die on the street, that means that, as he said, the emergency room is the last line of treatment. Every emergency room will have to take people in. And the one line he missed saying, I think, is that the emergency room is the most expensive and least effective place to get basic medical care treatment.
Okay, any further discussion on the bill? Seeing none, then Representative Huntley renews his motion that House File 802, the first committee engrossment, be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. Thank you, Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
We'll now go to House File 1671. This is the bill that will be the supplemental budget bill, and I would move the House File 1671, the first engrossment, be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Committee on Ways and Means. And what we'll be doing, members, as you can tell from your agenda, we will be hearing from each of the divisions relative to their division report, and when we are done then, we will have a complete bill, and there will be a motion a little later when we take up the first one, which will be transportation, that will strike everything that's currently in the bill, and we will begin to build the new bill with the transportation article. Representative Leader. And Representative Champion, would you make the motion relative to the Transportation, Finance, and Policy Division report?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the Transportation, Finance, and Policy Division report for House File 2591, the First Committee Engrossment.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion on the vote for the division report? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Champion.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I move to delete everything after the enacting clause in House File 1671, the first engrossment, and insert the language from House File 2591, the first committee engrossment.
Okay, the motion is before us. And Representative Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, the transportation section of the budget does not have a large amount of general funds, so it's significantly, most of our cuts will be in two areas. The two areas that use the general funds in the transportation sector are Metro Council and the Rural Transit. In addition to that, we have a lot of small accounts, but they're so small that you can hardly, it would impact them totally. So our cuts are based primarily in the Metro Council and Rural Transit. We met our target. We exceeded our target because of a situation. There's been a bill passed which deals with hazmat, which amounted to $150,000 in general fund monies. That's been repealed. That was an issue where the hazmat transporters were paying being duplicated with the federal law. So we repealed the Minnesota law, and that provided a loss to the freight department of $150,000. So that's included in our budget reductions. But basically, our target and our budget reductions pretty much consistent with the governor's recommendations. So what we do, we cut the freight, as I pointed out, $50,000, and the other $100,000 is distributed into cuts with the Metro Transit and Rural Transit. And when we looked at Metro Transit and Rural Transit, we took the total amount of general fund monies and the motor vehicle excise monies that they get for, like, Metro Transit, and added that up, and also for Rural Transit, and added that up, and took the sums of both, and then took the proportionate amount that they get in the total budget and spread that to the budget cuts. So that provides that Greater Minnesota reduction in fiscal 10-11 is $821,000, and in fiscal 12 and 13 amounted to $1.3 million basically. And that's roughly 14.5% of the total cut, which goes to Rural Transit. Metro Transit, we cut $4.84 million in fiscal 10 and 11, and roughly $7.7 million in 12 and 13, and that's roughly 85.5% of the total cuts that were taken here, in addition to those cuts that we took for the $150,000 that we took, that we reduced the hazmat portion. Also in the bill, many of you may recall that the Department of Transportation can't spend any of their money unless it's authorized by the legislature. The department's getting roughly $200 million in ARRA, or what we refer to sometimes as stimulus monies. In the bill, we authorize that expenditure. We actually increase the state aid road construction amount, or not $200 million, that's the other part I want to talk about. It was actually a $104 million increase in that. But we also, there's a bill in the legislature, and it was recommendation by the governor to set $5 million aside for what we call a federal emergency relief account. And that's money that would be replaced by FEMA as MnDOT would do the work and get it back. Right now, if there's a flood situation and MnDOT goes out and spends the money, they don't get reimbursed by FEMA sometimes up to 2 years. So this would allow MnDOT to use that pot of money up to $5 million to pay those bills or whatever they would have, and that gets reimbursed by FEMA. There's also a cap on that. In the event that that account would reach $10 million, the excess would go into the general fund. We also have bills in the legislature in which being addressed we're going to put in here. If you remember, maybe it hasn't come to that, but in the committees, in the Chapter 152 a year ago, there were bonding provisions that extended out 20 years. And there's bills that have been passed and will increase the bonding capacity for the next biennium by $200 million. We provide for that in this bill, so that's also another part of the bill that we didn't have in before. Basically, the impact on metro and rural transit is significant because there are areas which, because of the cuts, we probably could expect service cuts or cutbacks somehow. But the February forecast was different than the November forecast, so some of the impact was lessened in the February forecast because the motor vehicle sales tax revenue came in higher. So although there's a cut here, the Metro Council and Rural Council won't be impacted as significantly as it would have been in the November forecast. And that's pretty much a general outline, Mr. Chair.
Okay, are there any questions of Representative Leader? Representative Coles.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Leader, has the Met Council indicated at all how it intends to distribute the reduction for bus service between Metro Transit and the suburban opt-out providers?
Representative Leader.
Mr. Chair and Representative Coles, we have discussed that in committee, and they're aware of it, and I'm not aware of the solution. But the one thing that they did, and I think you may are alluding to, is the fact that the operational costs for the bus and light rail and commuter rail, the operational costs for light rail and commuter rail, they've reached their limit, so they're actually in a total operating cost right now. So we didn't separate the cost in the metro between light rail or bus.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Leader, I'm looking at line 3.22 to 3.26. The reduction, the $4.8 million reduction, says is from the general fund for bus system operations. And my only concern is that as the Metropolitan Council decides how it's going to distribute that reduction between Metro Transit and the suburban opt-out providers, that it does so in a way that is not disproportionately disadvantageous to the opt-outs. And so I'm not sure if Met Council has made any comments along those lines, but and I can follow up with them as well.
Mr. Chair.
No, Leader.
Mr. Chair and Representative Cole, that was discussed with Metro Council, and they are aware of it, and I believe they're going to address that. Or not believe, I know they're going to address that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Leader.
Any further discussion? Seeing and none then, Representative Champion renews his motion that we strike everything after the enacting clause and insert House File 2591, First Committee Engrossment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Yes, thank you. Representative Murphy, when you're ready, we'll take a couple of motions from you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Mr. Chair, I move the Cultural and Outdoor Resources Finance Division report for House File 3015, the First Committee Engrossment.
Okay, the division report is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, I move to incorporate the language from House File 3015, the First Committee Engrossment, into House File 1671, the First Engrossment, as amended, except for Section 16, lines 4.25 to 5.3, and Section 19, lines 7.29 to 7.35. Mr. Chair, that except as Section 16 and 19 are being carried in the Education Finance Bill, K-12.
Okay, and members should be familiar with that motion because we've made that in the past. That's part of the alignment with the education bill, as Representative Murphy pointed out, and then to match the way the accounts are set up with the Senate as well. So the motion is before us. Representative Murphy on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Our committee attempted to use a thoughtful and inclusive process that recognized the knowledge, the talents, and the creativity of everyone associated with the committee, and we drew up the proposal that's before you using guiding principles prepared that we prepared this article for the supplemental budget bill. Our division in the state has a number of proven agencies and organizations who deliver quality programming to the people of Minnesota. Yep. While we face financial challenges, we believe they provide value and deserve continued state support. This is a statewide challenge. Everyone was willing to take their fair share to address it. To the extent possible, we believe that we should stretch our state dollars as far as we can by maximizing federal match money. To the extent possible, we should be mindful of strategic investments we make and the impact they have on the state and local communities' economy, as well as their impact on the positive quality of life for people who call Minnesota home, as well as those who come to visit. We need to be vigilant in abiding by the 3A's constitutional amendment and not replace general fund dollars with dedicated sales tax revenue. Representative Morgan, the vice chair of our division, is going to go over the spreadsheet, but on the spreadsheet, there's $5,000 less than our target, which was $2.5 million. The $5,000 less is being carried in the other divisions, K-12 primarily division. You will also see on the spreadsheet that there are no cuts on our spreadsheet for libraries, but we cannot say, and libraries are also carried in the K-12 spreadsheets, but libraries cannot, you cannot say that libraries were held harmless, because you have to remember that the LGA cuts and on allotments affected the libraries first. You also have to remember that by the LGA cuts, many cities and counties across the state that fund their libraries had to make budget reductions to those libraries, and hours were cut and personnel were cut. And yet, libraries are serving across the state many more people than they were serving 2 years ago. You also have to remember that last year, in the 2009 finance appropriation bills, on the tax or the tax bill, I'm not sure which it was, there was an agreement made with libraries for a reduction in maintenance of efforts that they were able to ask for reorganization and of how much that the city or the county might have to pay in maintenance of effort. And that was implemented in 2009. And libraries will also be participating in the shifts if the K-12 bill accepts the shifts that are going to be proposed. And so there's four ways that they have already paid. Mr. Chairman, Vice Chair Will Morgan will talk about the spreadsheet.
Welcome, Representative Morgan.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members, as the Chair, Representative Murphy, mentioned, we met our target of $2.5 million in cuts in our committee through targeted cuts that kept in mind our desire to save jobs and also leverage federal funds to the greatest extent possible. As you can see on the spreadsheet, we have 15 different areas accounts, and it compares our recommended cuts to the governor's recommended cuts. You can see that in six of the areas, we recommended the same cut in all of those areas. The agencies involved indicated that they were able to handle that level of cut effectively, and they were certainly willing to do their share. In four areas, we cut less than the governor. One of those areas was Explore Minnesota Tourism. Clearly, there is a great jobs impact on our investments in tourism throughout the state, but especially in greater Minnesota. So we cut a little less than the governor there. In addition, we made cuts that were less than the governor's recommendations to the Arts Board, the Humanities Center, and in the area of public broadcasting. In those areas, the governor actually, over time, planned to zero out those budgets. We felt that they made important contributions to our state in the areas of public broadcasting, in particular, the state's Ambler Alert system, the emergency broadcast system. Those are all, the backbone of all those systems is formed by our public broadcasting system. So, though we felt that those areas should take their share of cuts, we did not feel that they should be zeroed out. And then in other cases, there were five areas where we cut more than the governor. So certainly you all have had time to take a look at the spreadsheet. That is a quick summary, and we are happy to answer any questions.
Okay, are there any questions of Representative Murphy or Representative Morgan? Representative Poles.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Murphy, I notice on line 26, and I didn't ask this of Representative Leader, but I noticed line 26, the governor had recommended ratifying his unallotment for the 12 and 13 biennium, and it doesn't appear as though you're doing that or at least carrying that on your spreadsheet. Representative Murphy, maybe this isn't a fair question of you. Maybe it's a better question for either Chair Solberg or Chair Carlson, but does the House DFL partial plan that we have involve ratification of any of the governor's unallotments, or are we going to see this on all the spreadsheets where the unallotments are not being ratified?
As some of you may know, there's a court case moving forward dealing with the unallotment, and the oral arguments are on the 15th, so we're not engaging the issue of unallotments at this time, but we are very aware that the issue is before the courts, and we'll have to see if it comes before the legislature. And can't tell you much more on that. You're an attorney, so you know what that means in terms of the oral arguments. We can't predict, you know, how rapidly they will rule, but governor has asked that it be an expedited ruling.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. I certainly can appreciate that none of us can predict what the court will do, but we can certainly choose as a legislature to lead if we feel as though if we feel strongly about the position that we're advocating as a House of Representatives, utilizing taxpayer dollars for. I hope that there'll be a plan put forward and not wait for the courts to decide. If we believe that as a legislature that the governor's unallotments were not appropriate, I hope that we'll come forward and solve the budget with that in mind.
Representative Rukavina.
Did we use taxpayers' dollars for an unallotment lawsuit?
Yeah, Representative Rukavina. $25,000 from the House Rules Committee budget was paid to David Littlehog to file a brief on behalf of the House of Representatives.
Well, Mr. Chair, we should have used more because we're giving up our constitutional authority, and I don't want to do it lightly, and you don't want to see the day that some other governor, maybe even a little crazier than one that's currently in there, uses power unconstitutionally to do things that take away the authority of the legislative bodies that you and I care about.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina, I'd encourage you
to represent Thiessen.
I'd encourage you not to talk about Representative Seifert or Representative Emmer behind their back, but
he wasn't talking about them.
Well, Mr. Chair, we can have this discussion again as we move forward, but I find it curious that it doesn't appear as though we're solving that $2.7 billion challenge that we have in addition to the $994 million challenge that we have.
Just a reminder, I don't want to spend a lot of time on the unallotment right now. Today is the 12th. The oral arguments are presented on the 15th. That's 3 days waiting, and then maybe we'll get a little feel for when the court ruling may take place. But Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to point out that Representative Rukavina should be listened to very seriously on this issue, because he is half of the team that once and ever in the history of the state, for I know, successfully sued a governor on a constitutional violation. And what?
Representative Rod.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the comment that, you know, it's the 12th and we'll find out something on the 15th, or at least the process will be going on the 15th. But the finance bills are here today. And if we don't consider, or if we're not going to ratify the unallotments, I think it's incumbent upon us as a legislature then to determine what we're going to do about those dollars and how we're actually going to cut those dollars. And unless the plan is to cut them out of education or health and human services, we have these budgets here before us today. And so it seems to me that it is the appropriate time to actually deal with those things, unless we're going to punt down the road, which it sounds like we're going to do. But I think the unallotment, if folks feel that it wasn't right, then I think it should be considered within these finance budgets, because this is the appropriate place for that discussion, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the opportunity.
Okay, any further discussion then on this particular article? Then Representative Murphy renews her motion that House File 315, the first committee engrossment, put into House File 1671, the first engrossment as amended, except for sections 16.25 through 5.3 and section 19, lines 7.29 through 7.35, the education sections. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. Thank you. And we now have Representative Junkie. And we'll let you get settled in and you can make your motion.
Mr. Chair, I move that Agriculture, Rural Economies, Veterans Affairs, Finance Division report for House File 3438, First Committee Engrossment, be moved before the committee.
Okay, any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Junkie.
Mr. Chair, I move to incorporate the language from House File 3438, the first committee engrossment, into House File 1671, the first engrossment, as amended.
Okay, the motion is before us. And Representative Junkie, you have an amendment?
I have the A4 amendment. If you could move that, it's an author's amendment. Mr. Chair, the A4 amendment, we heard this bill in committee. We actually had it in the bill, and then we removed it mistakenly towards the end of the committee hearing. And talking to Department of Agriculture, it's one of their department bills, and concerning registration of tree cutters, and we want to keep that in the bill as it moves forward.
Okay, so the amendment is before us. Any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Mr. Chair, before you have the bill, supplemental budget bill. Again, remembering this is supplemental, so I'll kind of hit some of the highlights. If people have more in-depth questions, that's fine. We carry the accounts of Minnesota Department of Agriculture, Board of Animal Health, Agriculture Utilization and Research Institute, as well as the Department of Veterans Affairs in our division. Department of Agriculture in the bill was cut 7.9%. Veterans were actually increased 0.2% in those divisions. Looking at agriculture first, a lot of across-the-board cuts to grants and those types of activities, the exceptions, and again, you can see those on your spreadsheet when you look in column V, you'll see the exceptions. What we did different than the governor, for the most case, we cut well more than what the governor recommended, but there were a few instances where we did not do the cuts or cut less. And for example, milk for food shelves, we did not make any cuts. We thought that unwise at this point in time. County fair money, you know, that go to ribbons and premiums for our kids and goes to the fairs to actually run those events. We all have them, and it's such a little amount, we didn't want to mess around with it. So there are a few things that were not cut. Of significance, I guess, in the Department of Agriculture, obviously ethanol payments are cut again, 9.3%, higher than anyone else, but they are deferred out, as we've been doing the last few years, so they will be deficiency payments out in now probably 2013 or 2014. We also eliminate within the department the gypsy moth and emerald ash borer programs. Those really shouldn't be in the Department of Agriculture, and so we're helping with a little department realignment while we're doing our budget and a little reform here. Otherwise, you know, department budgets were realized through pretty much across-the-board cuts. Department of Veterans Affairs, we funded the governor's requests into the future for Fergus Falls, new unit opening up there at the nursing home. We also give some startup money for an adult daycare at Minneapolis, and we give some money to the MACV, that's a homeless veterans program, as well as Honor Guard reimbursement. All those except the MACV program were governor's recommendations, and we do that. Again, bottom line, 7.9% to the ag budgets, and plus 0.2% to the veterans budget, and that's the bill and spreadsheet before you.
Okay, any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, then Representative Chunky renews this motion that the language from House File 3438, the first committee engrossment, be included in House File 1671 as amended. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to move that the Housing and Public Health Policy and Finance Division report for House File 1354, the first committee engrossment.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Clark.
Mr. Chairman, then I'd like to move to incorporate the language from House File 1354, the first committee engrossment, into House File 1671, the first engrossment, as amended.
Okay, the motion is before us. If you would explain the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, the bill basically adopts the governor's recommendations with a couple of exceptions. We do not ratify the governor's allotments in fiscal year 2012 and 2013. Instead, we're cutting two programs as the governor did, the rehab loan program and the PARF program. For each year, we're cutting $4.9 million. And in the PARF program, we are, let me start over with the cuts to the rehab loan program. We're not doing that. That's $236,000, and in the PARF one in the out years, the governor did reduce it, and we don't. The net result basically is that the committee is recommending larger program cuts in the governor in fiscal years 2010-11 biennium, and smaller program cuts in the governor's than the governor's proposal in the next biennium 2012-13. It's a 6% permanent reduction to the agency appropriations budget in the rehab loan program.
Okay. Any discussion on the article? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. Representative Hilty. Okay. When you're settled in, why don't you begin your motions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the Energy Policy and Finance Division report for House File 1741, the first committee engrossment.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Hilty?
Mr. Chair, I would further move to incorporate the language from House File 1741, the first committee engrossment, into House File 1671, the first engrossment as amended.
Okay, the motion is before us. I understand you have an amendment, Representative Hilty.
I do, Mr. Chair. I believe the amendment has been distributed.
It's just being passed out, yes.
It's the 1741A3 amendment.
Everybody gets it. Or, well, you can begin explaining it, and I think we're pretty close to it, having everybody have a copy.
Mr. Chair and members, what the amendment does is, in the bill as it passed out of our committee, we had a $600,000 reduction in a couple of different ways from the E85 pump grant program. In conversations with representatives from the American Lung Association, which administers that program, we discovered that there was something of a discrepancy between the figures that we had been working on and what they thought was the case regarding funds that were still available but had been applied for and were in process. And so rather than let that stand as it was, we left the $150,000 that was in dispute with that fund and found a source in the bill to make up the difference, and that's what the amendment does.
Okay, any discussion then on the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Hilty then on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, the target that we were given for the division was $49,749,000. The bill as it stands currently is $21,000 over or under, depending on how you want to look at it, that target. It does transfer $49,770,000 to the general fund. We did, Mr. Chair, as much as possible follow the governor's recommendations. In the bill, there were only two very minor exceptions to the recommendations that the governor made, although in a number of instances we did make more extensive cuts than had been recommended. Basically, the transfers to the general fund are in several parts. We transfer from our general fund appropriations $1.2 million. Most of what we have in the Energy Finance Division is special revenue funds, and working very closely with the Department of Commerce staff, which I should mention was extremely helpful in going through this process. They were very forthcoming with the information that we asked, and we certainly appreciate that. What we did is to try to examine all of the special revenue funds that we had in the division and try to determine If there were excess balances in those funds that could be transferred to the general fund without affecting the operation of that particular fund, then I think that we did accomplish that. In transfers to the general fund, we have a transfer from the petroleum tank release cleanup fund of $3 million, a transfer from special revenue fund, and if members are looking at the spreadsheet, that's $5,018,000, and that is the total of the lines at the bottom of the spreadsheet. That is headed non-general fund revenues. In addition, there's a transfer of $15 million from the from the assigned risk plan to the workers' compensation assigned risk plan to the general fund. Some smaller transfers and a large portion of the total $25 million in fiscal year 11 comes from the securities, the mutual fund securities registration fee.
That it then?
That, Mr. Chair, is the bill. As I said, the total is $49,770,000.
Any discussion then on the motion? Representative Coles.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hilty, can you talk a little bit more about the transfers? What was the committee's thinking? I'm looking specifically at the big numbers, the workers' comp assigned risk plan and the securities redeemable registration fee, the mutual fund fee. I see that the governor did not recommend any transfers from either of those funds into the general fund, and your committee is recommending $40 million of transfer into the general fund. Help me understand the rationale for that. Why such a significant difference from what the governor recommended?
Representative Hilty.
Mr. Chair, Representative Coles, with respect to the workers' compensation assigned risk fund, there is something of a history of there being a balance in that fund. Historically, it has been sometimes rather high. And I believe it was in 2002, several hundred million dollars was transferred out of that fund. The current balance in the fund is $50 million. In consultation with the department, was felt that, and you know, there's things could happen to change the situation, but it was felt that $35 million would be adequate to cover the risks that are associated with the fund. And frankly, we were just looking for unused money. And there we felt there was some. As regards the mutual fund registration fee, that does in fact represent an increase in the fee from 1/20th of 1% to 1/10th of 1%.
Representative Cole said it.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hilty, I certainly understand the challenges, and I'm not even going to be overly critical of the transfer from, you know, the assigned risk plan. I didn't notice as I looked through the bill the increase in the securities, the mutual fund registration fee. That actually is a bigger concern, because that fee was initially intended to cover the regulation of mutual funds, and I know, you know, Representative Hilty, that has been a huge moneymaker for the state of Minnesota, and frankly put some of our domestic mutual funds, from my perspective, at a competitive disadvantage to mutual funds registered elsewhere. And we continue to over-collect on the cost of regulating those mutual funds by millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars, and that impacts the competitiveness of those products for consumers here in Minnesota. That's a concern. I highlighted. I'm going to take a closer look at the increased fee there. Does that leave money in that account, or does that drain it completely? Can you tell me what the balance remains in that account, or what balance remains in that account?
Mr. Chair, Representative Coles, I believe in the last session, as a part of the governor's proposal, this fund used to be capped at $25 million. And as I recall, 4 years ago, the administration recommended raising that cap to $25,600,000 to capture the $600,000 to balance the budget then. And in the last last session, the cap was removed entirely, so that the any funds that any revenue that comes into that fund that is not required for the administration goes directly into the general fund.
Any further discussion on the article? Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hilty. Just a small thing, but I noticed that for the special revenue fund direct appropriations, I noticed that you did not take the recommended cuts from the governor on solar rebates and then the UM National Solar Testing and Certification Laboratory. And I'm obviously that must be a priority for you then, and I'm wondering if you could just talk a little bit about why that would rise above other things, especially the certification laboratory.
Representative Hilty.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pepin, the reason for that is, first of all, it's not a considerable sum, but I understand that's a program that is of considerable benefit to the state of Minnesota, being that once that lab is up and running, it will be the premier certification laboratory in the country. And currently my understanding is that the money that is appropriated really is turning out to be very tight, probably somewhat insufficient for what we had hoped it would be able to accomplish. So it just seemed that was one of the funding streams that we did not want to interrupt. As far as the solar rebate program is concerned, I think it's somewhat analogous to what I described earlier about the E85 pump program, which although the funding is not has not been allocated to any for any particular rebate, there are certainly people across the state who are aware of the program that do have projects in process that we're counting on that funding, and again, that's probably enough to fund six or eight projects, or the rebates for those projects. And it seemed sufficiently insignificant in terms of the big picture that it was just not something that we wanted to do.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hilty. The problem is, after a lot of little insignificant 36,000 here, 10,000 here, a million there, pretty soon you're talking about real money. So I'm not sure if that's what I would consider a priority. I do have another question, though, on the money taken from the petroleum cleanup fund. I'm wondering if how that would be paid for. Would that be passed on a tax to the people who purchase retail or petroleum products? How would that be paid for?
Mr. Chair, Representative Pepin, there's that account is funded by a blink on, I believe, a surcharge at the wholesale level, and it has a floor of $4 million whenever the fund falls below that level. The surcharge blinks on, and stays on, it's probably a question of a month or two to replenish the fund to that level.
Okay, any further discussion? Seeing none, then all in favor of the motion to include the language in House File 1741, the first committee engrossment into House File 1671, the first engrossment as amended. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
Motion carried. Representative Wagenius is next.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. I move the Environment and Natural Resources Finance Division report for House File 2314, the first committee engrossment.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Wagenius?
I move to incorporate the language from House File 2314, the first committee engrossment, into House File 1671, the first committee engrossment, as amended.
Okay, the motion is before us, and I understand, Representative Wagenius, you have an amendment?
I do. I would like to move Amendment 2314A1, and we had some additional language in our bill that we were working on, had decided not to use it, but failed to delete it going out of committee, and so this is just that deletion, essentially.
Okay, the motion is before us, then. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Wagenius, there's another amendment. Do you want to explain the bill first and then take the amendment later?
Okay. That would be fine.
It's by Representative Pepins, so we'll get to you after she explains it.
Members, this is the Environment and Natural Resources Finance Committee report to you. We have six areas, PCA, DNR, DNR PILT, which we separate out, Bowser, Minnesota Conservation Corps, and the Metropolitan Council Parks. The way we approach this, well, first of all, let me tell you what our target was and that we did meet it. Our target was $16.3 million. We met the target. We met our tails target. We were $3 million, essentially, over the governor. We also had a different, the governor posed a problem for us because the way he proposed to balance the budget in this area was to take a lot of money from funds where people had put money in expecting a specific outcome, like a natural resources fund. The committee discussed that early in the process and said, no, that's not the right way to go. We are going to be doing general fund cuts, both to meet the long-term budget problem and essentially for the fairness of it all, to protect the folks who had contributed to funds. So you will see that because of that, I think people were surprised with the size of some of these budget cuts. As someone, I think everyone in the committee did not want to make these cuts, but we all know that to meet the governor's criteria, we need to do that. So what we did is, when we were looking at cuts, we looked at the our good fiscal staff, Jim Reinholtz, made a chart for us, which we gave to the committee early on, which showed what the governor's unallotment cuts were, so that we could, in the end up with something fair considering the unallotments that had been made. So I'm going to give you the percentage cuts in the agencies that include unallotments. It ends up at 6.5% overall, but while our cuts were 5.1%. But just to show you the cumulative effect, because I think that's far more important than just what we've done. So in the Pollution Control Agency, it's a 9.1% cut. In the Department of Natural Resources, minus PILT, it's a 6.8% cut. DNR PILT cut is 6.5%. Bowser, Boil of Water and Soil Resources, is 6.5%. Metropolitan Council Parks is 6.5%. And the one place we didn't do any cut was the Minnesota Conservation Corps. So we gave them a zero cut. A small cut would have meant a cut of a lot of summer jobs and wouldn't have affected our bottom line a lot in any event. So that is overall what we did. And perhaps if we want more detail, I can tell you that in addition to those general fund cuts in these areas, one of the things we were very aware of was the issue of supplement and supplant from the Constitution. So within the framework of DNR, where this is the most important, the cut to forestry, waters, and parks and trails was less than the overall cut to the department. So that's how we met the issue of supplant. Okay, so with that, we took some, in addition to those things, we took some cancellation of accounts, flood accounts, where money had not been spent. We took a transfer that was recommended by the governor of some surcharges on offenses, tickets type thing, and we took that to the general fund. So with that, perhaps you have an amendment? It's not my amendment.
We have one here from Representative Pepin, A2. Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Wagenius. This amendment has to do with the Red River Valley flooding, and it was brought to me by a constituent of Maury Lanning. Maury supports this, and I'm not sure, but I would guess Representative Eakin and Representative Markward may find this of interest too. What this amendment does is, instead of cutting 14 million from, or thousand, excuse me, from the Cooperative Weed Management Program, it cuts 90,000 from that program, and then it deletes line 7.31 and 7.33, so it would restore the 90,000 to the Red River Basin Commission. And just a little bit more on that, the commission is working on projects like modeling on the mainstream Red River to reduce flood flows. The efforts aren't bondable, if that was a question from someone. It also might have an effect, if we don't do this, it might have an effect on matching funds from North Dakota and Manitoba. And this was not in the governor's budget. He wanted to preserve this board. And I just think it's a question of priorities. My understanding is this cooperative weed management program is somewhat idle right now, and I just think that with the raining as it is right now, we need to prioritize, and I think this is a better use of the money.
Yeah. I have Representative Houseman's hand up, too. Who would like to speak first? Representative Wagenius.
A correction first. Representative Pepin, you don't take money from a cooperative. Don't take money from a cooperative weed management. You take money from the reduction in appropriations from enforcement of the Wetland Conservation Act.
What was that? Yeah.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you. I might have drafted it incorrectly. That wasn't my understanding, and you're right. It does look like it's drafted like that. Can I temporarily withdraw this and find out if this is the correct?
We're going to be moving pretty quickly. What was your intent? Representative Solberg?
Mr. Chair, she's restoring $90,000, and she has to come up with $90,000 to do that. So she's doing it in two places.
Is this the correct?
in County of Cooperative Weed and the other one.
Yeah.
No.
Okay, while she's looking at that, Representative Hausman, you had your hand up. Maybe we.
Well, mine would have just been.
Oh, okay. While we're waiting for Representative Pepin to get more information, why don't we see if there's any more discussion on the bill, or did you have a comment about the amendment?
Well, let me just make a comment. Representative Pepin is, where she's giving the money, is to a nonprofit. That is not a creation of this state.
Okay.
And, of course, it would be lovely in better times if we could give money to nonprofits. However, in the Red River area, there is both a Red River Basin Commission and a Red River Watershed District Management Board. They're largely overlapping. And part of what we're doing here is reforming. But beyond that, there is a whole nother issue here that we're beyond planning in the Red River Valley right now. We are into implementation. And if you will recall in the bonding bill that Representative Hausman brought to the floor yesterday, she had in the bonding bill $13.5 million more than the governor requested for flooding in the Red River Valley. With those dollars, there come administrative costs. So we have more, far more than the governor recommended, helped out the Red River Valley with real implementation. And I think that's the important part here.
Yeah.
And so, members, I would ask you to vote against the amendment.
Okay, on the amendment, Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and sorry about the confusion there. Obviously, this isn't my region, so I just found out about a little bit ago. You were right that it is the Department of Natural Resources for the Enforcement of Wetland Conservation Act, and my understanding was the governor actually recommended a far greater cut, and I didn't have a chance to look in the spreadsheet, but because it's sitting idle and it's not really being used right now. And the other half about the bonding money, I don't believe the Red River Basin Commission, which is the only group that's working on these programs, I don't think that's bondable money.
Representative Wagenius.
No, it's not the only group working on this. What I said was there's a Red River Basin Commission. It's a nonprofit. It's not a creation of the state. That is where we made the cut, and that's where you want to restore the money. There's also a Red River Watershed Management Board, which is a joint powers organization. Both do long-term planning. They overlap considerably. So I think there are two issues here, that we have multiple agencies doing the same kind of administrative planning thing. That's one issue. The second issue is we are moving away from planning into implementation, and that's why Representative Hausman's bill was so strong. Okay, now, if you move to what you said in your bill in terms of what you're cutting in the wetlands area, there was a major rewrite, and this is what the amendment actually says. There was a major rewrite of the wetlands laws 3 years ago, and part of that commitment was increased enforcement. And so the other thing you're cutting is in specific enforcement in the 11-county metropolitan area. And by and large, you're taking the more expensive route here because it's always more expensive to replace a wetland than to do enforcement. So with that, members, I would ask you to vote no on this amendment.
Okay, any further discussion? Representative Coles.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a question, because I just want to make sure I understand as we move forward here. Well, I recognize that if this wasn't balanced, we would actually be spending more, but I don't believe we have a budget target. Are you indicating, Mr. Chair, that if we're going to come forward with amendments, they have to meet some target that I don't, maybe there are targets. I know Chair Solberg's left. Maybe has Ways and Means actually formally passed targets? Do we have targets that we're formally operating under?
The answer to your question is that Ways and Means will be acting on the targets, I think, on Monday or Tuesday. Each of the division chairs was given a target, but the formal resolution will be before us next week. But the goal, and we would ask everybody to abide by that, was to, in the end, to have a bottom line of $313 million in reductions, transfers, and cuts. Now, not all of that is before this committee. Some of it is before the tax committee. Procedurally, what is done in taxes will be merged into this bill in the Ways and Means Committee. But they also have a target. When I referenced 313, it's $105 million of that will be addressed in the tax committee. So each of the divisions did follow their target that they were given, and then we'll formalize it on the first part of the week. Representative Rukavina.
Chair, Representative Wagenius, where's the money coming from on page 4 for the lands and minerals reductions?
There's a motion.
Oh, excuse me.
Further discussion on the Pepin Amendment? Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I can't remember if it was Mr. Representative Solberg or who it was that kind of implied that that this wasn't balanced, but it actually would change the cut from 7,000 to 52,000 in both years, and that would is the same amount. It would 90,000, so it's an equal transfer. So I just wanted to clear that does balance even within the budget, and I did get a chance to look at the spreadsheet, and the governor did recommend a $100,000 cut to the Department of Natural Resources for the enforcement of the Wetland Conservation Act. So apparently the governor and the agency doesn't view it as much of a priority as the committee chair does. So I just wanted to clarify that before we voted.
Okay. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then, all in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No. No.
Motion defeated. Now Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wagenius, on page 4, are those reductions coming from the minerals, lands and minerals division, or from a special account, particularly from the school trust account?
We have several cuts from minerals. We have cuts from the management. See, I don't know exactly where you're reading.
Well,
let me help you out.
Let me look on page 4, line 4.11 through 4.13. Let's take that. Is that an appropriation from the school trust to the DNR, and now you're taking and putting in the general fund?
Representative Guinness.
No, these are all general fund cuts.
All of these are general fund appropriations on this page, and not that money that you've taken from that account to
all general fund cuts.
What is the EAW language?
We took that out.
Oh, that came out by amendment. Okay, well then finally, on the PILT.
What page are you on?
Page 13. So that's an ongoing reduction then?
Yes.
And do you know what the ongoing reduction is in dollars? And what the 87% reduction is in 11 and then the ongoing?
Okay. We are at 6.5% reduction, and it's $2,750,000 each year.
And then the ongoing is?
No, that was high. I thought that was not right. Okay, DNR PILT is $3 million over in the next biennium, if that is your question.
$3 million, yep. And then it decreases permanently after that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Representative Wagenius, and, you know, we've had this discussion in this committee, Mr. Chair and members, about taking land off the tax rolls, particularly the Lake Vermilion State Park, which I don't think will ever happen. And really, we already have a state park there, but then you take that kind of property off the tax rolls, and then you turn around a couple of weeks later, and you take the reimbursements for lands you're taking off the tax rolls and reduce them. It's very difficult, you know, to accept this kind of hit to my district in particular, being that it's St. Louis County, the biggest county in the state, is almost 64 or 65% publicly owned. And now we're taking more land off the tax rolls, for what reason I still don't understand, but and then reducing the payment in lieu of, it's difficult to accept it for my constituents.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. The legislative auditor just came out with a major report on DNR lands, and in one section of it, the auditor talked about PILT payments and talked about the overpayment of PILT, particularly on acquired lands. And those are, that's kind of the new lands that we are purchasing for parks and for wildlife management areas and those kinds of things. What was striking to me, besides the 29% overpayment, was that PILT, there was, I think we all expect PILT to do what you ask it, or you're talking about, is to be an exchange for the loss of property taxes. But that's not exactly in law right now. And so the legislative auditor was having trouble measuring how effective PILT is to meeting the law because the law is not clear. It seems to me that there is much work to be done looking at reform in PILT because it's not being applied evenly across this state. And I hope that this is a summer project that House Research can work on and help us out with, because it needs, oh, I know, there's a big smile here. It is a problem, and I think the legislative auditor is teaching us much, and Mr. Chair, if you had time sometime later, I expect you won't, but it would be interesting to hear from the legislative auditor on that particular issue.
Representative Rukavina.
Well, Representative Wagenius, parts of the report talked about the fact that the DNR can't manage the lands that it's got now, and we just buying more. And I can tell you that I, myself, and many of my constituents pay more than 75 cents an acre in taxes on land we own. We pay a lot more than that. But again, we just bought a state park, or land for a state park, next to a state park that isn't being taken care of and has never been developed, on a lake that we already own 22 miles of shoreline, with school trust land that is not constitutionally meeting its requirements in raising money. And there's so much that goes on at the DNR that I could sit here and filibuster for all day, but I know people want to get going. It's the weekend, but you know, a few years back, Representative Wagenius, you gave the ecological resources at the DNR $500,000 to cut invasive species for biomass for the St. Paul biomass facility, which is great. And so they paid a logger to come in and cut pine trees down. And instead of getting a logger to pay $27.50 a cord, and meanwhile we can't cut a tree, and more land's being taken off of our tax rolls, and our logging industry is going down, and I don't see any of those. How much did ecological resources get cut in this bill? And do they still get an appropriation for invasive species for cutting down trees and removing trees in places they think they shouldn't be because they're like cedar trees and pine trees instead of oak trees or whatever? And are they cutting this bill at all, Representative Wagenius?
Yes, ecological services is cut, and with luck, it wasn't cut as much as some things, which is a blessing, because in Representative Junkie's bill, He cut out the responsibility of the Department of Agriculture to do anything about invasive species that have landed in this state. And they're not very good at keeping species out of this state. So the DNR has now got a new burden that nobody talked about. There was nothing until they just cut it out of the ag budget. So DNR has a much greater responsibility for invasive species with less money.
Well,
and we just voted on that bill.
Madam, or Mr. Chair, and Representative Wagenius, again, you gave Ecological Resources $500,000 to cut down trees and pay a logger to cut them down when any other logger would have come in and probably paid $25 to $30 a cord for those trees. So there's, you know, a lot of money that could be saved in other areas rather than raiding the pilt payment and not allowing our communities to survive where a lot of state or a lot of private land is being taken off the tax rolls.
Okay, Representative Coles.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wagenius, a question about lines 103 and 104 on the spreadsheet. And I'm curious what the committee's thinking was in doing what appears, at least to me, and please correct me if I'm wrong, putting some giving relative preference at least to, as compared to the governor, for the forest information system. I'm not even sure what that is, so please help me there, over firefighting. It looks as though the governor didn't recommend any cut to firefighting, and the committee's recommending $144,000 of cuts. The governor recommended $70,000 of cuts to the forest information system, and the committee's recommending $28,000. I'm just trying to understand what's going on there.
Representative Wagenius.
I think we were more targeted than the governor in cuts. And in the whole of forestry, we tried to keep the cuts underneath the cuts to the DNR of a whole, and we managed to do that. So I don't know exactly more to tell you than that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wagenius, very, very briefly, I know it's not policy committee, but what is the forest information system?
Representative Wagenius.
Somebody's going to have to help me with it. You know,
Madam Chair, Mr. Chairman, Representative Coles, it's a data electronic database system that they're developing there. The use of it, I'm not familiar with. I would have to get the DNR, but they have been electronic, putting their data on electronics.
Mr. Chair, I don't think we need to have the DNR testify now. I'll follow up if I have specific questions. I guess I just question the, you know, we're cutting firefighters here and not cutting a data system, at least relative to what the governor proposed. And so I'll follow up with DNR.
If I would like to respond. Generally throughout DNR, they don't know even some places where their lands are. They don't know where all their easements are. We funded through LCCMR, through the lottery dollars, to give DNR money to figure out where all the easements are that they had purchased over the years. And if the easements were still, obviously they weren't being enforced, but if they were still protecting the same kind of land that they're protecting. That kind of lack of knowing is replete throughout DNR. That's what the legislative auditor said. So in like the land records, this may be a different way of saying the land records, and I think that's what it is. DNR is developing a land record system. I'm just not used to the word forest information section. And these may be separate, but in each of the areas in DNR, you cannot manage what you don't know what you have. And I don't think it's appropriate at any time right now to cut any of the management systems for figuring out where we own lands.
Representative Solberg.
Well, just a point of clarification on firefighting. That's number is probably, in there is a number that's been, you know, a forecasted number of what was in. In the forest fighting, forest fire, if a forest fire breaks out and we do not have the resources to fight it, we do fight it. And that comes back in as a supplementary one. It is one of those, that's one of the few open standing appropriations that are in state law.
Okay, any further discussion? Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I noticed on line, let's see here now, it is 40, line 46, the Attorney General costs, there's a significant addition there. Could you maybe just explain what that might be attributed to?
In their waters program, you'll see two places where those costs come out. Their general fund costs at the same number, and they were in the water, in the DNR waters. We took them out of the general fund as a way of cutting the general fund and asked the environment fund to pay those costs. So we are not, that was one of the few shifts that we made in here. And hopefully those costs to waters programs, permittees will begin to pay for the Attorney General's costs, just like in the air section of DNR. The air permittees pay the Attorney General's cost. That is not going on in the waters area. It should go on, but we could not get good information from PCA about how much was permit cost, how much was general advice to the agency. They don't have it divided out. And without having it divided out, we could not say in this bill, charge to the permittee and put it back in the fund. We could say it, but we would not know any, we would have no way of knowing what kind of money it would raise. So this was not a, this was not new money, if that's your question.
Thank you. Okay, seeing no further discussion, then all in favor of the motion that we incorporate the language from House File 2314, the first committee engrossment, into House File 1671, the first committee engrossment as amended. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
Motion carried. Representative Paymart will be next. And there's an author's amendment, I'm told, that's being distributed from Representative Paymart.
I'm cutting. We're letting them all out.
Representative Paymar, as soon as you're ready, you can begin the motions.
I move, Mr. Chair, the Public Safety Finance Division report for House File 1270, the first committee engrossment.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Paymar.
And then, Mr. Chair, I'd move to incorporate the language from House File 1270, the first committee engrossment, into House File 1671, the first engrossment as amended.
Okay, the motion is before us. And Representative Paymar, do you want to move your amendment now?
And then I would move, Mr. Chair, the A14 amendment.
Okay, the motion is before us. On the amendment, Representative Paymar.
Mr. Chair, the just the amendment basically clarifies some language in the bill. It also deals with a provision with the Office of Justice Programs related to battered women's shelters, crime victim programs, sexual violence programs, and youth intervention programs, limiting the percentage of reductions that can be made in the overall cut.
Any discussion on the amendment? Representative Coles.
Mr. Chair, Representative Paymar, we had some discussion about this in committee yesterday. I'm just trying to get caught up here. I wasn't aware that we had this amendment. How does this differ than what we did in committee?
Representative Paymar.
Mr. Chair, it really doesn't change any of the discussion that we had in the committee. It basically limits the reduction to 2%. And what else does it do? It, because of the bill that we passed last year in the first biennium, we had language in there that limited the reduction to 3% of all of these programs. And what we did in committee is we struck all of that language that we enacted last year, so we have to put the language back in that reflects the will of the committee's the will of the committee in terms of what the size of the reductions could be made by OJP.
Okay, any further discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Paymar on the bill.
Mr. Chair, I'll just briefly walk you through a couple of items. We had to make a $36 million cut to this to the Public Safety Division, which was not easy to do. We tried to methodically look at all of the agencies and in our division and make the cuts fairly. Everybody, all of the departments took some cuts, or most of them did, and this was the same level of cut that the governor recommended. And just to highlight a few points here, we made a 1.6 reduction to the courts. We did protect drug courts from being reduced or eliminated. The other thing that we did is which was a significant, I don't know if significant would be the right word, but it's the cut was less than the governor's recommendation, as was the cut to the Public Defense Board. The cut to corrections that the governor recommended, ours is a little bit higher, but we did have some language that ensured that correctional officers would not be eliminated nor treatment programs. And finally, Mr. Chair, members, the reductions to the Department of Safety, we also have some rider language that protects BCA scientists from being eliminated. The other controversial issues that committee should be aware of that we discussed in committee was, of course, the fire safety account, the transfer we made in the special revenue fund, and the governor had recommended using all of those dollars, moving all of those dollars to the general fund. We did that. We agreed with the governor to some degree, but we also appropriated $1 million for firefighter training. This is a one-time transfer. And, Mr. Chair, members, I don't think there was, those are really the highlights of the bill.
Okay, any discussion on the motion?
Oh, I'd also add, Mr. Chair, there was one other minor controversial, I don't know how minor it was, but you may have gotten letters from your constituents or people in your counties regarding the Sentence to Serve program. We did not adopt the governor's program to eliminate the state subsidy for this program because we think it's important, although we did reduce the subsidy in half.
Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Paymar, could you tell us where the implied consent transfer to OAH is? Is that just is that idea not happening, or is it being carried elsewhere? Just a status update?
Mr. Chair, the bill... Representative Simon, the bill was heard yesterday in the Public Safety Policy and Oversight Committee and is moving forward. And the transfer is on line 29 of the spreadsheet.
Okay, Representative Simon, is that?
Yep.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think one of the areas that, you know, we've worked on some health care reform and some other areas. I know that. We also have institutional care for our prisoners. Can you point out to me where there's some treatment alternatives report? I believe that's on a different kind of an area. But is there any health care changes in regards to this particular population at all?
Representative Paymar.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer. Representative Coles brought up an amendment, and we had some significant discussion on it, and we concurred with the said at the committee level that we would be having hearings to see if we could reduce some of the health care costs associated with taking care of the offenders at the Department of Corrections. We did not adopt any specific language. But it is an area I think that we probably should look at more carefully.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It certainly seems as if those who are outside the prisons are having to deal with some of these issues and some of the cuts. It certainly seems that that's an area where it might be fair to consider something like that. So I'm glad to hear you're taking a look at. Is this the kind of thing that we might see an amendment then on the House floor?
Here, I'm not sure that we would be able to accomplish what we need to by the time this bill reaches the floor, but I think all members of our committee are very sensitive to this issue. We saw, I forgot that from the department, it was requested from the department that there were some fairly high costs there that we think we need to have more work on. But I don't know that we'd have an amendment prepared by the time it reaches the floor.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think that's too bad because it certainly seems that, you know, acknowledging there's some significant high costs there, and it seems as though that in a fair kind of approach, you know, in some of these other areas, we left it to the systems to have some leverage as to how to adjust these and to work it out. We certainly did that with the hospitals and some other things and the coordinated care. It seems as though this might be an area where we could certainly not have all the details or complicated language, but I think in some of these other areas we've certainly taken an approach that had kind of an overall cut and let them kind of make some adjustments as they see need, as they see fit.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, I just would point out that we did, there is a reduction to the DOC budget, and we left them some latitude regarding how they want to reduce their budget. You know, I don't know what else to tell you.
Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Paymar, on page 16 of the bill, could you explain what the underlying intent is in striking the language on lines 16.15 through 1.17.
Mr. Chair, this Representative Hilty, this language was enacted last year, and to conform with the amendments that we made this year, we had to delete that language. There was amendment by a representative. Well, I don't know if you want us to go into detail. It just that language currently is on line 4.1 through point 4.5 of the bill. These were amendments that were made in committee.
Representative Hilty is. Yeah, more.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'll pursue this question with Representative Paymar after the meeting.
Representative Coles.
Mr. Chair, just a quick comment on the health care issue. Representative Kiffmeyer is correct. There are problems, I believe, within our system, but frankly, the department doesn't have the tools that it needs just yet to resolve this issue from my perspective, and I'm committed to working with Chair Paymar and the department and others to give them those tools so that they can help get these costs under control. The department has very little negotiating leverage with providers, and the challenges are really around specialty health care providers, and when offenders have major medical incidences and need to be transported to a hospital, they have no ability to negotiate rates with providers like other state programs do, and all of those dollars come out of the general fund. They need the tools statutorily to be able to do that, and that's an issue that I think needs some consideration in the health committees as well, because it's going to involve provider reimbursement rates. And so it's a complicated issue, but it's one that we're trying to get our arms around as quickly as possible, because there is a potential for significant savings in that arena. I know the department is interested in trying to move in that direction as well.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate this and that additional information. Is this something, again,
By the way, I serve on the Health Finance Committee, so I'd be glad to work with you on that and Representative Paymar as well. But is this something, you know, time is crucial right now. Is this something that we're looking at giving the department these tools yet in this legislative session?
Mr. Chair, I don't want to speak for Chair Paymar. I'm certainly willing to work expeditiously on this. I'm not convinced that we're going to be able. I'm learning quickly that it's not a simple. There's not a simple fix, and if there is, I'll be happy to move forward very rapidly with it if we can find a simple fix. But it's as with all the. Healthcare financing issues are incredibly complex, and so if we can move it forward quickly, Representative Kiffmeyer, I'm committed to do that. And I know Chair Paymar has indicated that we may very well have hearings on this very issue yet this year, but we got some work to do, I think, to see if we can be productive in those hearings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm very glad to hear those encouraging words in a bipartisan fashion. So I look forward to some resolution here.
Representative Rukavina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Paymar, you know, the sentence to serve program is very well received in my area, and I know there were cuts proposed by the governor, and I don't think you did them heavily, maybe, but I'm looking at the language on page 8, and I'm just curious, because I don't know much about it, although some of you would rather have me in the program, but... The way it currently works is what's happening here that the counties are going to now collect from the person that's in the sentence to serve program. The sheriff's going to supervise it. Then are they going to put the money into a state program and get reimbursed back? Is that the way this language is reading here?
Chair,
Representative Paymar.
Representative Rukavina, as I said earlier, we did reduce the... sentence to serve program our reimbursement by 25%, but we did, I think this was a bill by Representative Kelly, put this language in there. If the county wanted to charge the offender a fee to offset the program, they could keep that and use that to supplant or expand the program. I think statewide I've just heard nothing but good things about this program, and it's when we're making all these cuts to local government aid and county aid, it's something most of us on the committee did not feel should be eliminated.
But I agree with you 100%, Representative Paymar, about the program itself and the popularity of it, I guess. But what I'm not understanding is the local unit of government, the county, going to collect money and then give it to a statewide program just to get it back to itself?
Mr. Chair, Representative Rubina, it's really not a statewide program. I mean, we basically pay for the program. It's a county program.
Okay.
The language is all. We're not requiring it. It's all. It says may charge the participants a fee to offset the cost of operating the program.
So currently, Mr. Chair and Representative Paymar, you reimburse the counties for the program, and this is just allowing them. See, I was confused as to whether it was a state program that paid the counties, and then the counties were going to collect money, kick into the state program just to get part of it back, and I was wondering if that's the way it worked, but no, it doesn't.
No.
Good job, Paymar. Good job.
Okay, any further discussion?
Mr. Chair. Smith. Yeah, I have a question for Chairman Paymar. And it has to do with the fire safety account. Just to refresh the memories of ourselves and the committee, that was a fund established. The account, I should say, was established, I think, in 2006. And that's money was collected, paid for by our constituents, roughly about $5.20 per year every time they paid their homeowners insurance or their fire insurance. They contribute a surcharge to the fire safety account at about $5.20 per home per year. When we adjourned last year, in June of last year, when the fiscal year was over, there was $4.4 million in that account that had been collected. I think from that date to roughly now, that's grown substantially, perhaps, and I don't have the exact number, but I believe that was at least twice that amount. The fire safety account was set up by this legislature in 06, again paid for by surcharges on fire insurance policies, to be a fund for fire safety, to train firemen. I guess my question is this. I notice by amendment you've limited any cuts to battered women shelters to no more than 2%. At least that's the way I read your amendment. You have, is by your portion of your bill dipping into the fire safety account, I think that's at least 61% or more of a cut to that account, again, which is a surcharge, not a tax, from the general fund, like we fund battered women shelters. Why? The question is, why are you cutting so deeply in a fund that was established to train firefighters over 60%, and why are you limiting the appropriation to battered women shelters, which I believe is about $71 million or more a year to the OJP for those programs, and you're limiting that to 2%. Why are you dipping into the fund for over 60% and limiting your cuts elsewhere to 2%?
Representative Paymar.
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, as we discussed in committee, this was in tough economic times as we are in right now. Many divisions are looking at special revenue funds and are taking that money. And I don't disagree with you. It's not my first choice. The governor, as you know, made this recommendation and provided no additional money for fire safety training. It's not that we did exactly what the governor said, and we also appropriated $1 million additional on top of what they got last year for fire safety training. Is there a need out there for more training? Absolutely. We heard it, your bill, and I think we had very good testimony on the needs that there are in the state. And I would also argue that there's lots of other training needs in the state. I think we'd like to train our police officers more. I'd like to provide more training for probation officers. We had a hearing earlier in the session on fetal alcohol syndrome and train probation officers to recognize this. The training needs are always important, and this happens to be surplus money that's left over in the special revenue fund for the fire safety account, and it's a one-time transfer. I hope we don't have to do it again, but we're in the midst of an emergency. That was the recommendation of the committee. I also think, Mr. Chair, speaking to the issue of battered women shelters, which I guess I didn't, I think we talked about this in the committee, that we did have language in the bill that said that if any battered women's programs had any money in their fund balances, we wanted to address that, but again, in bad economic times, I think you know, Representative Smith, that a lot of our battered women's shelters are full. I don't think this is a time that we stop funding a program that provides a safe haven for victims and families when they're being abused. And so these, I guess, it's a sort of a decision around priorities.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Smith.
You've been a gentleman at committee, and I think you've had committee members responding to that well, so I don't want to engage this conversation any further, but I will just say this, that I realize the governor has recommended the same essential cut that you have made, and I'm not embarrassed or ashamed to say for the record that just because you two boys want to make a mistake doesn't mean I have to go along with it.
Okay, is there any further discussion on the bill? If not, then Representative Paymar renews his motion to incorporate the language from House File 1270, the first committee engrossment, and House File 1671, the first engrossment as amended. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. Representative Kahn.
Uh-huh.
if we need the amendment from Lauren.
I'm not touching her.
That wasn't her.
I know. No, no, which one?
Okay, Representative Kahn, as soon as you're ready, like the others, you can begin the motions.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, I'd move the State Government Finance Division Report for House File 3449, the First Committee Engrossment.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Kahn.
Now I'll move to incorporate the language from House File 3449, the First Committee Engrossment, into House File 1671, the First Engrossment, as amended.
Okay, the motion is before us. Representative Kahn, you have an amendment?
No, I don't.
Oh, excuse me. I guess maybe it's Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chairman.
You want to take the amendment now?
Maybe we better, being that it's not your amendment. I was looking at my sheet here, had it down as Kahn, but I guess it's Solberg. So why don't you explain the bill, and then we'll take up the amendment.
Yes. Okay. This bill is largely consistent with the governor's recommendations. The bill cuts $32.7 million from the state government general fund budget, whereas the governor recommended $40.3 million in cuts. The governor's recommendations cut deeper for several reasons, but namely because some of his cuts impacted agencies outside of the state government division's jurisdictions. Briefly, the governor's recommendations in the bill cut this, and for the most part, we followed the governor's recommendations with only, and I'll specifically point out where we deviated from them. But the bill cuts the Secretary of State, Attorney General, State Auditor, and state agencies and state government's jurisdiction by 3% across the board. Very careful in the auditor's budget to only cut the non-audit portion of the auditor's budget, because the audit portion pays for itself and is completely reimbursed. We also included the governor's unallotments were included in the tails. The bill cuts problem gambling grants funded by lottery proceeds by $50,000 and administration self-advocacy grant for people with disabilities by $8,000, roughly a 6% cut. And as long as the basic programs were retained, those groups didn't seem to have problems with that. The bill picks up the governor's tax compliance initiative at governor's and revenue's recommended level, netting $20.1 million. This is a 4-to-1 return on money put into it. In previous sessions, we've put in numbers for tax compliance, so we put in higher numbers than the governor's for tax compliance, and they've kind of complained about it, but they've always met our level that we asked them to. This time, they went to probably what they thought our level was going to be, and then we didn't increase it above that. So the bill also, just again looking at little holes in our system, the bill requires tax preparers who file more than 10 returns to file electronically, which saves approximately $78,000 annually. The bill, again, some kind of minor things. We increase the governor-elect transition expenses to $162,000. This is consistent with recent transition costs and higher than what was recently passed into law, which would have been about $50,000. The bill also adds operating a state recycling center to administration's responsibilities and requires revenue raised from the sale of recycled materials to go to offset the costs of the recycling programs. And finally, the bill codifies some lease purchase appropriations which were made last year, consistent with the lease purchase contracts for MMB's MAPS SWIFT system and Revenue's integrated tax system. And we did that in last year's state government finance bill. Lease purchase payments were authorized for that. Those agreements were authorized there, and the payments will conclude in 2019. Okay, now to emphasize the House items inconsistent with the governor's recommendation. The bill cuts the governor an additional $30,000 over the governor's recommendations. This is from the special account that we set up last time, where we're putting money from all of the various departments into the governor's office in a special account to deal with the governmental relations from the governor's office. So, but this one sort of stuck in our craw a little bit. This is money that was transferred from the Veterans Affairs Support Our Troops License Plate Fund to the governor's office to fund a quarter of a political appointee. And so this bill transfers the money back to the Support Our Troops account so it can be used for its intended purpose. And this change was an amendment from Representative Kett. So the bill does count. One of the issues that we had in discussion in the division was the bill cuts the legislature 1.9% less than the governor recommends, 3.2%. And we took the numbers contained in the Senate bill to cut the Senate budget by $873,000, which is $600,000 less than the governor's recommendation. The bill cuts the House by $1.2 million, $800,000 less than the governor. The LCC is cut $643,000, $350,000 less than the governor. If it was up to me, I would totally protect the LCC. I think it's one of the most cost-effective items of government, but we were being as cooperative as we could. So the House bill is designed so that the legislature can carry out its constitutional obligations. Now, one of the big places, if the governor had this weird thing in the budget where he gave MMB authority to cut an additional $9 million from agency operating budgets. And since many agencies are outside the committee's jurisdiction, we decided that the bill would cut this way back. We'd only include a $2.6 million cut. Now, we were going to put specific numbers in, but we decided to give the most flexibility to the governors and the executive branch to do it. We required these cuts to be achieved, if possible, by better using available state office space, reducing out-of-state travel, reducing energy usage in state building, reducing reliance on professional and technical contracts, increasing telecommuting, consolidation of IT capacities, improvements to the state fleet management, and a long-term switch to day cleaning for state buildings. And all of these enterprise items are historically within division's jurisdiction. They're finance, OET, or administration. But if MMB fails to cut the $2.6 million, so this is way, way back from the governor's $9 million, it then must cut agency operating budgets to reach the objective. And that number is needed so that we can, even though we do believe that these cuts could be met, that these savings could be met, we need to put the language in from the cut to totally realize the cut. The bill, one of the things that was suggested that implied consent jurisdiction to the Office of Administrative Hearings, as the governor suggested, and we decided we didn't really, in fact, this is a bill I think that's still in policy committee, or did it? Passed out of policy committee. We decided it was a much better item for Representative Paymore's policy committee, who would understand it much better than finance committee, who would understand it better than we did to deal with. So some of the other provisions that we had is that a couple of them were from Representative Kalin, cutting constitutional officer pay by 60%, and the remainder is to be earned back using a per diem amount equal to the Senate. This is to deal with constitutional officers who seem to be spending a lot of time not on state business, and the thought was that they would just record what days they're on state business and make up their salary in that way. We're also another representative from another point from Representative Kalin is MMB was authorized to mothball or rent the governor's residence if it was financially benefit. The MAPS and SWIFT system was renamed. The state webmaster was established.
Mr. Chair, I have to interrupt there. I'm sorry. What was it renamed to again? I forgot.
Well, you know, I've had problems with this since I was the only person on the division who voted against it, and it was from a bill that was originally introduced by Representative Winkler. I will point out it was signed by all the division members minus one, and also by the ex officio members. So I'll let Representative Winkler explain it if you need further explanation.
Mr. Chair, members, the fact that we were developing and implementing a new statewide accounting and procurement system, we thought it was better to list the values that we wanted to achieve through this new system. So it's not just software, it's achieving our values, and those values are knowledge, accountability, and honest numbers.
Okay. So, going on.
I just wonder why another senior member with the same election year
Mr. Chair,
you have to have a committee member.
This is a this is an issue for our division. I think we're waiting to see which member we might name this building after. So don't consider this a slight. We're just waiting to see who wins the contest.
You're gonna die first.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Cole.
Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler. I know that Representative Pepin is the Republican lead on the committee. I'm just curious if there was any consideration given to naming the system something like putting equitable percentages and proportions in numbers. I know Representative Seifert used to chair the committee, and you know, maybe something like strategic electronic information for effective risk treatment. And I know Chair Krinke, former Representative Krinke, chaired the committee, and I don't know, maybe something like killing revenue increases not knowing effects.
Mr. Chair.
Just a suggestion as we move forward on a bipartisan
basis. It sounds
basis.
Like you're a natural for this division.
Representative Kahn, were you just okay. getting your done?
But continuing, we then established a bill of mine which established a state webmaster. This is a webmaster IT transparency report required, and OET must absorb the cost of this. We're almost going to put diminish their cut and then increase the 2.3 million cut that we did, but we decided that this is part of that sense of IT efficiency. So we think it all comes in there. If we need to delineate specifically how the money will be allocated, we can do it at the other time. But we just decided it would be the cost for this would be subsumed within that 2.6 million that we're working with. And we also did put in language giving flexible authority to use IT resources to map certain state expenditures. This is similar to how the ARRA funds are currently mapped for public review. And any committee member who hasn't looked at it, I advise you to go to just Google MN Recovery, and you'll get to this incredible map, which then shows you, this is the federal requirement from greater transparency. This was done using the federal funds as part of ARRA, and we do believe that following on this system with very little additional cost, we'll be able to track the capital investment budget, the legacy budget, and the LCCMR budget. When I first saw it, I wanted to do the whole state budget, and people kind of paled and said that the budget system for those is not in good enough shape, not good enough transparency, not good enough, well enough focus to be able to do it. But the things that we've asked to have it done on, it will. There are some examples. The state of, you know, again, we can give members a better example. The state of Maryland has a fantastic one where they're mapping their capital investment budget. I think the state of Washington is going to do their capital investment budget. You know, they're obviously. We didn't put specific language as to how it's being done. It's obviously a problem when you have some appropriations for things that are spread all over the place, like local bridges and roads and so forth, but the thought would be that those would be somehow indicated that was an expenditure, and when the expenditure is made in a particular place, you'd then put the pin in the map. But anyone who hasn't, that ARRA site is wonderful to play with. So then this was a even though he wasn't a member of our division, which is unusual, we put it in from Representative Roger Reinhardt, who came here from being in the Duluth Duluth government and discovered that he couldn't get what he had had, a discount on health club membership. So we put language in requiring CGEP insurance required to offer discounts on health club membership. I think that would be done at the next negotiating thing. We did, other things came from default on all state printers to print. These are all budget items. Default on all state printers to print two-sided. The language that has been in a state government bill under all chairs, Rukavina, Krinke, Haas, and so forth, we make, and even before that, probably started with me, I guess, when I was chair of that. But we make the parking on Aurora Avenue public during the session, and this time we've made it financial where the meter fees for that, which we think will, could be highly profitable meters, maybe at the rate, if we calculated at the rate that Minneapolis meters are, it would put a $250,000 into the general fund. So, and then we delayed the electronic reporting of local pension funds, and a request of the auditor's office, and then from Secretary of State, the authority to use access matching Help America Vote for qualified projects for the remainder of this biennium. We also, Bill of Representative Pepin to authority to demolish state-owned buildings valued less than $50,000 without legislative approval. There are incredible pictures of shacks and all sorts of things that seem to be better. Then we again, a bill of Representative Pepin's to revenue must issue RFP for tax analytics and business intelligence tools. This is after the tax integration system will be in place. A bill of Representative Winkler, who wants the LCC to issue an RFP for business intelligence analytics tools. And then a bill of Representative Downey to the which he worked with the Department of Administration, expanded authority to consolidate state fleet management, and then another bill of Representative an amendment suggested by Representative Downey, the Commission on Service Innovation created members appointed by the governor to report on how to re-engineer delivery of state and local government services. We didn't do a specific, we really made this something that the governor, if should the governor do this, will have to absorb the cost. So we didn't do any specific members or meeting times or requirements to do that. And that's essentially the bill.
Okay, Representative Duncan.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, interesting bill as always. Why are you putting on page 9 the two-sided printing into stat? That seems bizarre to me.
It's the only people who should adjust this are the people who cut down trees to make paper.
Well, no, and I get that, but and that's not why I'm saying. Why don't we put in that we change all our bulbs to incandescent? Why don't we put in that we set our heat to 68? Why don't we put in that you turn off a light when you leave the room? I mean, these are internal operating things, and we're going to put these into statute now or session law or whatever we're doing. I find a little, you know, I think policies can be developed internally and do these things, but to now go down the road of, and I'm sincere, to go down the road of putting all these minor energy-saving or cost-saving things into a bill like this, isn't that, I don't know that that's ever been done.
Well, we didn't, well, Mr. Chairman, this is actually kind of a simple thing that has been done, and it doesn't require you to use it, just sets the default on printers at double size.
Mr. Chairman, again, our default's already set that way, and that's why I say, why are we? I mean, it's just one of those things. I think it's mucking up our statutes, and then I would suggest on the parking for the senators, why don't you just charge them rather than putting meters up for the public? Just charge them out of their.
They are charged. Mr. Chairman, senators are charged.
So how much difference is the price from the meters to the senators?
Oh, significantly. But the issue has always been not that the senators aren't charged for parking, but the fact that it's appalling to take up the space that should be the most inviting to the public to park. And, you know, it's been proved that public is very happy to park at parking meters when they need to park for something with the senators because they don't want to walk from a parking ramp into the building. To show you how long this issue has been up, there was once one senator. There was once one senator, as I recall, although he was quickly shut up by his companions, who thought it was a good idea And that was Senator Hubert Humphrey who thought it was a good idea to do this.
We're trying to move along. I represent Halston.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I appreciated your letting the Capital Investment Committee know about the language on page 10, the map data on expenditures. I was just checking with MMB whether they had done a fiscal note on it, and they haven't yet. I still, as I read this, particularly because it's also Environmental and Natural Resources Trust Fund, Outdoor Heritage Fund, Clean Water Fund, Parks and Trails Fund, am not quite clear the assessment. Must assess each fund subject to this section of proportional share. I was thinking that you had said in our committee that on the bond proceeds it actually is charged to each project. But that wouldn't be the case on the rest of these?
We're looking... you know, and I'm sorry, my expert on this is not, won't be back until Monday. But we're looking at very tiny amounts of money. It would make no sense to assess it. If you assess it to each project, the number would be like 0.0001% or something like that. The basic expense for doing this has really been done in the development of the system, which was done during the ARRA money. And so to put a project into the system will cost
very little. So it won't be per project. It will be to the fund.
Yes. Because
I probably misunderstood that the other day.
Yeah, well, it will be how the managers of the fund kind of decide to do it. You know, it's not, you don't want to, you know, you just, there are certain overhead expenses, and this then becomes one of the overhead expenses of managing the fund.
Mr. Chairman, on the same point of the bill that Representative Hausman was speaking on, the map data, I don't know enough about it at this point in time, but I do know that we did a similar thing in the bill that we passed last year and paid up front for the development of some mapping and some informing the public of what the expenditures are for various projects and so forth. And so as this moves along, I may have some other comments to make, and I just want that on the record that we want to compare it. I've asked Ms. Conley from my staff to work with Mr. Shackleton from Representative Kahn's committee to make sure that I understand it completely before I have to vote on it after today.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, the issue is it's a kind of a different level of mapping. This is a mapping that makes the projects, and again, everyone, if you look at the MIN recovery web, I probably should have had a computer here and put it up on the screen to show you what the MIN recovery website looks like. You know, you understand. So I, Representative Murphy, I think it builds on the mapping that has been done. It's not going to be as detailed, you know, again, talking to the people who were doing that, it's not going to be as detailed as that kind of mapping. And the reason you're looking at kind of big numbers in that is because they were doing things like the mapping of boundaries and so forth, and all kinds of information that comes up from the agency about the expenses and so forth. This is something that's really more amenable to the public to work with.
And I think you should work on that, right, Representative Murphy, okay. Just to get your information. Okay. Representative Murphy.
And Mr. Chair, I want it noted that although there's nothing about pensions in here, I've been a regular caller to the finance chair and the ways and means chair and the leadership chairs, the leadership people, saying that there is a need for money to be put into pensions, and that I felt very good that people are still listening to me, and I will still be calling you on a very regular basis.
And at least one of us came down to your office to talk about it.
At least one. No, actually two of us
came
down.
Oh, okay. Very good. So both of us
came. At different times, on different days.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Representative Murphy. Representative Solberg, you have an amendment?
I have an amendment, the A27 amendment. I would move that.
Okay, the motion is before us. Representative Solberg on the amendment.
Mr. Chair and members, the first line, 1.3, is deleting the language, including a move to daylight cleaning. That's something that they can do if they so desire, but it is dictating a schedule of when cleaning in the buildings and state office, the buildings and other things that down here could be scheduled. It would be a little bit difficult, I think, to do that, and that's also something that is generally involved in work hours and solved around the negotiating table. Page 1.4 is deleting the section that mothballs the governor's residencies. On page line 1.5 deletes the membership in or discount memberships in health clubs and so forth. I think it may be a good thing and something we could do, but I think the cost of that is about $1 million. And page line 1.6 is the constitutional salaries, not reducing their constitutional salaries and putting them on a per diem. So that's my amendment. I would appreciate your support.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none then, Representative Kahn, comment?
No, these were not actually items that I added to the bill, and I wanted to just wondered. No, we were very supportive of members of the committee's desires to put things in the bill, and I just, if that member wanted to say something, I would offer him the opportunity. But.
Okay, any further discussion? Seeing none, then, is that member here? Is that what you were saying? I didn't
quite
follow you.
Well, he doesn't seem.
Okay. All those
I see him in
favor
the room,
the
but he doesn't seem to be moving forward. So.
All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. Representative Diskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move an oral amendment.
Okay, if you could give us the amendment.
Mr. Chair, I'd like on page 10 to delete section 5.
Page 10, section 5, okay.
Oh, no. You got to bargain.
Okay, does everybody have the motion? Representative Biskins, on your motion.
It's never been used.
Mr. Great. Chair, it can stand on its own.
It can stand on its own. Representative Kahn?
Well, Mr. Chairman, it's...
Mr. Great. Chair, it can stand on its own.
It can stand on its own. Representative Kahn?
Well, Mr. Chairman, it's like three times in a row in the last week I've agreed with Representative Biskins. As I said, I was the only vote on the division against inserting it. And, you know, I'll just leave it to the committee. As again, I don't like to reverse the hard work of my committee, so...
Hey, Representative Winkler?
Mr. Chair, and just to show how much Representative Kahn didn't want this, the amendment was adopted on a voice vote that was probably about 10 to 1, and when she lost, she called for a division.
No, I didn't. I said it failed. Someone
else. Right. We called for a division. So just to make sure that, you know, and this is an acronym, not a name, and it was a strong sense of the committee that this should be included. And in fact, I had the satisfaction of learning from the Senate that they're open to this language and from Commissioner Hansen, who said that it was the one issue that he and I seemed to agree on. So, Mr. Chair, I would oppose the amendment.
Okay, Representative Coles.
Mr. Chair, while I often agree with my friends Representative Biskins and Representative Kahn, I couldn't disagree with this amendment anymore. I very much agree with Representative Winkler. I think the committee's done very good work. I know they've taken this issue seriously, and it's been a bipartisan effort, and I urge members to vote no on the Biskins amendment.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion defeated.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Biskins.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to offer an oral amendment.
Okay, what, if Mr. you could give us the amendment.
Mr. Chairman, on page 12, lines 6 and 7, delete the new language.
Okay. Page 12, lines 6 and 7.
Mr. Chairman, I have been informed that it would probably be better form if on page 11 I were to delete section 7.
You have that? Okay, does everybody have the motion? Want to comment about
Mr. Chair, I believe it stands on its own.
Mr. Chairman.
Any further discussion, Representative Kahn?
I would oppose this. This was something that came to us through extensive work, I believe, of Representative Downey with former Representative Jim Rhodes, now in the Administration Department. We did have, when some questions were raised about the possibility about the idea that we were going to be contracting out out this issue, we had a very good statement from the person from the who runs the Recycling Bureau. I don't know. Is there anyone from the Department of Administration who would like to discuss this?
No.
Is there anyone here who would? Yeah. Great.
And if you could identify yourself.
Yes, good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Dave Fielding. I'm the Director of Plant Management. The State Resource Recovery Center is under my area of responsibility. We're in favor of the language as proposed and would be opposed to the amendment because we need this language in order to be able to structure the business in such a way that we can operate it under either the current state-run operation or through a third-party operation if that is the result of a competitive bid. Our plan is to set the operation up to competitively bid that operation and then, depending upon the results of that bid, to continue. So there will be no discontinuation of any of the service. It's strictly a matter of the business taking the money off the general fund and putting it into an internal service fund.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman and members, what this essentially would do would be to set up a mechanism where government can compete with the private sector.
No.
I believe the private sector should. We have private sector recycling centers. I don't know why we need a state recycling center.
The motion is before us. Any further discussion?
I think that has to be clarified. We are recycling everything on the state right now. This actually opens it to some private, I believe.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the whole purpose here is to ensure that the operation is, in fact, being run in the most efficient way. We believe that it is. We believe very sincerely that when we go out for a competitive bid that we will be the successful bidder. If we are not, then we will obviously transition to the private vendor who is the successful bidder. But I don't think that it is correct or even fair to the folks that have built that center down there to suggest that in any way their operation is more of a cost, net cost to the state than a third-party operation. We will find that out through the bidding process.
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, and to the testifier, I didn't suggest or imply either of those. What I did suggest and imply is that I don't think the business of the state should be the business that can be handled in the private sector.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kahn, I'm concerned about this language for almost the opposite reason that Representative Biskins is. I talked to Representative Saylor a lot about this section. When prices are good for things like paper, white paper, which the state is full of, somebody may be able to bid this and take the profit and do a very good job of recycling and take all the profit away. But when times are bad and the price of paper is down, then this will roll right back onto the state. That, I think, is a fair way of saying what Representative Saylor, who is our expert in this, told me about this. This makes me very uncomfortable. I think you have had a terrific recycling, and it's been done for multiple years, 20 or so. Why we're doing this right now is a mystery to me.
Any further discussion, Representative Connolly?
I can have that answered again by my way. I raised this question after Representative Wiginius raised it to me.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the reason that this is coming forward is because we have had to find ways to move money off of the general fund. Currently, that operation is funded through an allocation. The net cost to the state is the general fund allocation minus the revenue that we receive when we sell paper. That's why we're having to make this change. It has nothing to do with the need to drive the operation back into the private sector. It's all about trying to find ways, as you all are dealing with on a daily basis, trying to find ways to balance the budget.
Any further discussion? Representative Wiginius.
When our economy is better and the price of paper is high, we have lost the good revenue stream.
If I may, Mr. Chair, Representative Wiginius, the revenue associated with recycled paper does fluctuate, as we've seen.
That's right.
But that's going to be experienced no matter who provides the service. When the operation experiences high rates of return, obviously that will help, if we were the successful bidder, to continue to keep those costs down. In times of lean revenue, obviously there will be a reserve to draw from. But I think it's important to point out that even in the best of times, the revenue associated with that paper only represents about a third of the total offset to the cost of that operation, and that will be the same for any vendor as well. This operation, even in the best of years, has been a net cost to the state.
Any further discussion? Well, seeing none, all those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
The amendment is defeated. Okay. Any further discussion on the bill?
Thank you.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Madam Chair, put a lot of work into the bill, and I appreciate that. I just have to say that my one disappointment, as I mentioned to Representative Kahn, was in the spreadsheet and the fact that we are not taking the governor's recs, and particularly in the legislature. And the reason for that is I just think it's a little cynical for us not to take the same cuts and be willing to take the same cuts in the legislature as we're expecting the other agencies and constitutional officers to do. So I think it's hard to tell our story to the people of, you know, to get across the point that we understand what they're going through, and we understand that we have a lot of cutting to do and work to do, and we're not willing to take as big of a cut ourselves. So I just wanted to state that disappointment, but thank Representative Kahn for hard work.
Representative Kahn.
Chairman, I think the problem is that we're dealing with some funny math in comparing those. And I think I'll yield to Representative Winkler, who can.
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, members, the only thing I think that Representative Kahn is referring to is that the 3% cuts across the board don't actually come into effect for a lot of these agencies because of the various ways that they're backfilled through certain other mechanisms. And so the fact that the legislature is receiving less of a cut on direct dollar terms is actually a more straightforward way of representing our budget compared to several of the agencies that are going to end up with an actual cut of significantly less than 3%. So it's actually in line with other cuts that are being made.
Okay. With that, any further discussion? Representative Kiffmeyer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to clarify, when we had our State Government Finance Committee meeting, there was an amendment that came up having to do with support the troops, but there was nobody there from the governor's office or anybody else to kind of explain the situation. So I just want to speak for them from the Office of Veterans Affairs. And the explanation there was that the $30,000 was used for a quarter FTE to hire a part-time outreach coordinator to faith-based communities to work on veterans outreach with that group. So this employee worked with and gave presentations to leaders of faith-based communities in order to inform them of the state veterans' benefits, and so that they could then help the agency identify veterans in need of services and to connect them to those services. So the account is defined in statute as to provide for outreach to underserved veterans. And the use of those funds in that way was part of an interagency agreement. It was not simply a transfer to the governor's office for an unspecified purpose. So on their behalf, just bringing that forward and making a clarification.
Lynn. Just to that point, I was, too, as chair of that committee, aware of that money transfer. However, what I think we're going to do in the future, it's a large and a growing pot of money, and when people buy a Support the Troops license plate, they believe it is going for direct, you know, to buy eyeglasses for an elderly veteran, or to, it's going to support veterans or their families. And the problem we have now, it's a new fund, and maybe it was an oversight on our committee's part last year, but in the following year, I think what we'll do is statutorily earmark that money so that it has some transparency. So they can certainly come and use it any way they want, but next year in our budget, if we're all still around and it's similar, we will have a commitment with them to statutorily dedicate it, and I think that confusion will go away.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I appreciate that very much, because I think that really is the way to do it right. And I appreciate the fact that that will be looked at in that way. But on behalf of, since nobody was there to speak, bringing it forward, and we certainly do, certainly anything that we would want to do would go directly to the troops. I think that is the intention. We just need to be sure it is done in that right way. Thank you, Representative Junkie.
Okay, Representative Kahn renews her motion that House File 349, the first committee engrossment, excuse me, I missed the word incorporate, moves to incorporate the language from House File 3449, the first committee engrossment, into House File 1671 as amended, the first engrossment. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion carried.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Chairman.
And we now have Representative Rukavina. And that will be House File 1835. And
Mr. Chair, I'd move that the Higher Education Workforce Development Policy Finance Division report for House File 1835, the first engrossment. I'll move that.
Okay, the motion is before us to adopt the division report. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Rukavina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then I move to incorporate the language from House File 1835 into your House File 1671.
Okay, the motion is before us. And Representative Rukavina, there are some amendments here with your name. Do you want to do them now or do them after you explain the bill?
I could do them now, Mr. Chair. Do I need to move House File 1835, then the amendment itself, or do you want me to first the 1835-1 that we're working off of, or do I have to that now?
You've made the motion.
Okay.
The report is before us, and now you've moved to recommend it to pass, but this is the discussion point, so... which amendment do you want to take first? And
Chair, I'll take the A23 amendment first.
Okay.
And that is an amendment in this bill.
Excuse me, Representative Rukavina moves the A23 amendment. The motion is before us, Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair, in the bill, we increase some of the Board of Cosmetology fees. You know, we separated them last year, so part of this cleans up the barber cosmetology separation. And then what this also does is, you know, we had some members, including Representative Clark, who's not here right now, but who had had some problems with the board. And so the second part of the language on 1.4 to 1.6 tries to clear up an issue on just issuing a temporary license. It's, you know, part of the reform we want to see down there so people don't have to wait a month to get a salon expanded or a license for their cosmetology salon.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. A24 then, Representative?
The A24 amendment, if you folks saw the paper this morning.
Representative Rukavina.
I'll move the A24 amendment.
Moves the amendment. Any discussion?
Mr. Chair, what it does, and I believe it has the support of the Department of Employment and Economic Development, is, you know, if you heard this morning in the on the radio maybe, and or there was an article on the front page of the paper that my roommate showed to me, Representative Junkie, and basically we have run out of money at the workforce development fund for people that have been laid off because of the demand. There is money that'll be coming in, but because of statutory language, they really couldn't access it until next year, the way the statute currently is. So what this amendment does is allows the service providers who are involved in this for just for this year only, the ability to move some of that money. They would have to wait for it to see what the economy looked like in that, and maybe not access until next January, I believe, or March. I can't remember how the quarter system works. The problem is they're working off a federal calendar year, and our calendar year is different. So what this really means, this amendment, is that this will pay to workers who are sitting on a waiting list now, waiting for money to be retained, can get it this July rather than waiting until next year. And I think the department supports me on it. They're nodding their heads. And so that's what the amendment does.
Okay. Any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Rukavina, summary of the bill.
Mr. Chair, I cut exactly like you told me to, Mr. Chair. Not as, and I didn't want to, and I didn't like it, and, you know.
I'm not sure if I should say thank you or not.
Yes. You know, most of the cuts in this bill are coming from higher education. Workforce, the deed programs are contributing some. There's some revenue that we're taking one time from both Dolly and deed. And so if I'll just kind of walk through the spreadsheet if I could quickly, Mr. Chair, because I'm not, you know, I don't think any of us are proud of the cuts that we got to make, particularly to education and to deed, which is the agency that's not only charged with creating jobs in these terrible times we're living in, but paying the unemployment and other programs that are helping the laid-off workers. So I cut the Office of Higher Education, the amount that the governor wanted, but I just cut the staff, and I didn't cut any of the state grant programs. I didn't cut work study as an example because, you know, I was raised to believe in hard work and rewarding people for that. So we didn't cut the work study program like the governor had recommended. We had to pay North Dakota for reciprocity. They used the they told us a wrong number when they recalculated. We owed them a little bit of money, so you see that there in that interstate reciprocity payment. We took hit the Minsky system of $10,467,000 on top of what the governor did to them and what we've had to do to them the last few years. But we did ask the central office to take about 30% of that hit, $3 million. We direct in the bill that $5 million of the 10.467 be cuts at administration at the different campuses, and the rest will be allocated proportionately to the campuses. So approximately 2.467. At the University of Minnesota, we did basically exactly what the governor had in hitting the different specials at the university along with the operation and maintenance. We have language in the bill, and maybe Ms. Novak can point out if anybody's interested, that kind of directs the university to do the same thing with their central administration that we directed the Minsky system in cutting at the central office. Since they don't have one, it's directed towards that in the operation and maintenance cuts that you see on line 34, and it was directed, I think, $10 million, if I'm not mistaken. At the Department of Employment and Economic Development, we didn't do a few of the things the governor wanted. We tried to keep some of these programs like the extended employment and make smaller cuts than the governor had done. We tried to help out the state services for the blind and made smaller cuts there, and we didn't hit a lot of the different nonprofits that get that the governor had recommended be cut. We did make some bigger cuts, quite frankly, in the deed administration or those jobs that help provide the funding and oversight for some of those programs. And we took $1.5 million from the Job Skills Partnership. There was a surplus there, and so we took that to balance the budget. On page 3 of the spreadsheet I'm talking about, we also took $700,000 at Dolly from the Contractor Recovery Fund and $725,000 from the Assigned Risk Program as one-time money. And we cut mediation services to what I believe a little smaller than what the governor recommended. And then you see those fee increases for both the Barber Board, and Representative Gunther has a bill traveling on its own with those fees in there, and the cosmetology fees that we approved the other day. So, members, what I did try to do is not hurt the state grant program, because nobody is addressing the fact that there's about a $43 million hole in the state grant program already in this biennium with a full year left of grants. We've never cut that program ever in the history of the state of Minnesota. And so what we tried to do, I had a little tax increase in this bill, and Mr. Chair, you convinced me I was wrong, but I don't think I was. But anyway, I listened to you. But, you know, and we found a little bit of money to plug that in, but we had to also address some of the cuts or some of the ways to make the cuts more fair. And so what we did is we eliminated a program that Senator Pappas had put in last year's bill that really hadn't started yet, called the Bridge. We eliminated the Governor's Achieve program because it's out of money, and we eliminated a program that I had implemented last year called the Ninth Semester, where we would have paid one extra semester for students to be on a grant program. And then we capped the for-profits to the highest tuition charges at a Minsky two-year system. And with that, members, we covered quite a bit of that, what would have been that $43 million prorated cut to folks. And I do have some figures here that show what we did was a lot less harmful to students and families who have been laid off and had to use that grant program than it would have been by just ignoring it. And that's basically the bill. I'm not too proud of the cuts we keep making. We had a governor that came from the area I come from that cared about Minnesota and wanted to make it the brain power state, and I just keep I'm just fearful of the cuts we're making in higher education, that we're moving away from the brain power state is too rapidly. So with that, that's the bill. There's a number of things. There are some policy changes in here regarding a fee increase for the electrical program at the Department of Labor and Industry, and a something to do with waterless urinals. I'm not privy to that, however. Anyway, and that, so there's a little fee increase in there for that, and there are some programs in here, public works programs with taconite tax dollars that are in the bill, and I'm forgetting some other program, I believe, at maybe at policy in here, but I think that basically sums up the bill, folks.
And Representative Rukavina, as you know, chaired this division at one time and was real excited when I was appointed to chair it back in, I don't know, 79, 80, somewhere in that period. And I think I had one good year, and then the economy, much like it is today, took a severe dip, and unfortunately had to do some of the same things that you're doing. And the only thing I can say was that things did come back, and we were able to again do some good things, but we did have a difficult period. So I understand exactly what you're saying, because I was in the very chair that you are when we had to do some difficult things at that point in time as well. We are, as Representative Rukavina knows, one of our priorities when the education bill goes through is going to be the financial aid issue. So We're going to be working to resolve a big part of that as well. With that, any discussion? Representative Hausman. Representative Champion actually was much earlier, if that's all right. Representative Champion.
Mr. Rukavina, Representative Rukavina, I see that you, on page 3, it talks about reducing certain tuitions and those sort of things, but I also see that this particular bill seeks to eliminate the high school to college developmental transition program grants. And so I want to make sure that I'm reading that correctly, and wanting to also ask, is there perhaps another place by which these particular grants and these particular students get some support so that they're able to make that transition from high school to college?
Representative Rukavina, and I see Ms. Grimes is getting up. Is that something that she wants to comment on?
Or? Well, Mr. Chair, I can answer that, and that program was just going to start. It hasn't made a payment yet, if I'm not mistaken. And I had a program. We just started these last year. We were able to do it because when we got the 60-some million dollars of Pell Grants coming into the state from the stimulus package, that freed up money in the state grant program to do some good things. We did a lot of good things, and that was one of them we agreed to. The other one was the ninth semester, and we eliminated that program. We eliminated a program I cared about, ninth semester, and we eliminated the Achieve program because the ninth semester had only had one payment. The bridge hadn't started, the one you're referring to, and the Achieve program ran out of money. And so the Senate gave up a program in this bill, the House gave up a program they cared about, and the governor's office gave up a program. Because if we don't do this, Representative Champion, the cuts are going to be let me just say the average cut, and I don't know if I have it here by dollar amount, but if we go all rationing, we're going to lose $43 million. And with this proposal and with what Representative Carlson proposed, we might only lose about, I don't know, $4 or $5 million. That'll have to be prorated to the 97,000 people that are currently on that program.
What is the profile of the individuals who will not get the benefit of this high school to college developmental transition program?
I don't know that because it's never been started.
But did you have a profile in mind, or did you just come up with this idea of doing something without having a profile in mind?
Mr. Chair, it was a program that Senator Pappas had, not mine. The profile for most of the people on the state grant program are people who come from poor families or lower middle income families, and those are the people that we're trying to protect.
But
because if we don't do this and we have no money, the Office of Higher Education is going to prorate the cuts, and the average cut will be $300 or $400. But to some folks that are going to the university or a private institution or wherever, it might be $1,900. And so that's what we're trying to lessen. We thought, why should we start a program that's never paid yet? Or, in the case of the ninth semester, start a program that's only been paying out for one year rather than see these cuts across the board to people who are expecting more money. Representative Champion, I don't like doing what I'm doing. I had a bill, in this bill, a proposal to raise a little surcharge on income to completely fill the $43 million gap. But I didn't know if I had the support or not to do it, and I was convinced that I didn't have the support, although maybe I did, but that's a whole other issue. I don't like what we're doing here. I don't like this bill. I don't know if I'm going to vote for this bill.
Well,
but I have no alternative because I'd rather have to just not start a program that hasn't started yet or eliminate a program that hasn't even started yet rather than start cutting everybody else that's in the program currently. And they're your constituents and my constituents, and they come from all different walks of life and all different colors.
Well, let me say this, that I'm challenged by the fact that in this particular bill, we reduce costs for other programs and keep them afloat. But yet and still, that on the backs of those who really need the support as well, we continue to eliminate, not even reduce, but to eliminate those programs. And so I just want you to know that I'm a little challenged by that, and I'm not quite sure if I can support the bill neither.
We have Representative Houseman next.
Look, to this point, I just would suggest you just wait till you see the Health and Human Services bill.
Representative Houseman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Are the items on 26, 27, 28, is that what we normally do in our finance bills, or are you suggesting a different allocation that normally would have gone to this economic protection fund?
No, we've done this in the past, Representative Houseman, in this bill. And some of this money is coming from the fact that the mines didn't operate last year, or hardly operated at all. And in current statute, and it's been in there for years and years and years, if they drop under 30 million tons in 1 year, which they did, which is why we had 16 and 18% unemployment on the range this summer, that the money would go, that the mining companies wouldn't get a rebate program. And so that rebate program was directed to go into the Doug Johnson Fund and into another fund, and we captured some of that money to do some public works because of the unemployment situation.
Representative Houseman.
And then, Mr. Chair, since quite a bit of it has to do with wastewater infrastructure, do you know, do they work cooperatively with PFA when they're determining their point system and funding?
A lot of them have. You know, are either on a waiting list or will be using some of this to complete some of the projects that they do get money from the WIF. But I think most of this is just programs that they might have had if those local property taxes from the mining companies flowed to them instead of to that rebate program at the, that the mining companies get in law.
Okay, any further discussion? Seeing none, then Representative Rukavina renews his motion to incorporate the language from House File 1835, the First Committee Engrossment, as amended, into House File 1671, the First Engrossment, as amended. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Completes the division reports. So the chair, I'd like to move to direct staff to amend the title, correct internal references, correct any technical errors, and renumber accordingly, and renew my motion that House File 1671, the First Engrossment, be recommended to pass as amended and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Any discussion on the bill? Seeing none, then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. We now have Representative Houseman's bill, House File 3492. Representative Houseman.
Mr. Chair, I move the Capital Investment Division report for House
File. Could you flip the mic around? It's facing the other way. Yeah, there we go.
I move the Capital Investment Division report for House File 3492.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Houseman?
I move House File 3492 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay, the motion is before us. Representative Houseman, you have an amendment. Do you want to take that note?
I move Amendment A1.
Okay, the amendment is
just
before
appropriations
us.
Appropriations on made only once.
Okay, and any discussion on the amendment then? All, if not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Houseman?
And Mr. Chair, not that I'm anticipating any negative outcomes, but I'm just moving this particular asset preservation idea forward.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any further discussion? Representative Coles. Okay, Representative Biskins.
Mr. Chair, Representative Houseman, I don't recall what was in the in 2700 for
these exact numbers.
That was my question, Mr. Chair.
Representative Biskin?
Mr. Chair, to Representative Hausman, is this a compact, a midsize, or a luxury vehicle?
This is selectively chosen because these ideas, asset preservation, can move forward based on previous bonding authorization, because it's already been mentioned in a previous bill. That's why I chose asset preservation.
Okay, any further discussion? Seeing none, then, all those in favor of the motion to recommend House File 3492 to pass as amended and be referred to the Committee in Ways and Means, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. The bill referrals, there's an attachment, so those of you that are monitoring those can see those. I'd like to thank everybody. Not only did we have a long afternoon, but, you know, we had a couple of very difficult issues before us here this afternoon, and I think a lot of us were torn about some of the things that we had to do, and I just want to recognize that we should understand that it was a difficult period, and there are probably going to be some difficult days ahead, but I want to thank everybody for their cooperation. With that, meeting adjourned. Good job.